kick a little something for them cars that be bumping.
I love hitting hot music.
Big mistake. Big mistake.
Genius.
I know what you're doing right now, and I don't like it.
Man up.
Hamburger. How can we get back on the right track?
We're coming. We're coming.
Objects in your mirror may be closer than they appear.
Short cruise for the Tenor Fitzgerald today. Just one show, just a three-hour show. I am Tenor B, Brandon Molesky, usually the interim producer of the Common Man program. Today, filling in for the Common Man, Dan Cole, who is out. Ryan Donaldson with me today. What's going on, Ryan?
How are you, Tenor B?
Promotions director for KFAN. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to be with me.
Thanks for the invite.
Because I'm sure there's nothing you'd rather do noon to three than listen to me instead of actually getting your work done on a Friday.
So it's a FedEx Friday for me,
too.
You're going
to stay 7 o'clock tonight having to get all your stuff done, but I appreciate it, and the listeners appreciate it. We're pretty booked with guests today. Obviously, Lil B in her normal 1:15 to 2 o'clock spot.
Yeah, baby!
Mark Rosen in his now usual Friday 2 to 3 o'clock spot.
Yes!
Which is a feeling I love now, because Common takes off a lot of Fridays, especially during the golf season. So then, not only do I have to fill in for 3 hours, but I don't have anyone on those days in the 2 o'clock hours. So usually I bring in Justin Gard for a little JGMB, maybe Henry Lake if he's in town, which he is now. Dave Schwartz from Care 11. But now I just got Rosie, just as long as he's not taking the day off as well. I got that easy going for me. And then today, after a pretty big story yesterday in The Athletic, written by Michael Russo, beat writer for the Minnesota Wild, so we will chat about that because I think there's a lot to talk about regarding the local hockey team. So Michael Russo comes in studio next segment, and he'll be in studio from 12:15 to 1 o'clock. So because we have all these guests, Ryan, this is kind of my time to deliver everything I want to talk about. So I'm kind of going to steal, what's Lavelle Neal's opening segment? It's like three takes from three or three thoughts
from three? Yeah.
So I'm just going to deliver my three thoughts in kind of like lightning round mode. Why can I not say that?
Lightning round fashion?
I wanted to say lightning round mode.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
No, it's really not tough. It's tough when it's me.
Hang on.
Thank you. In lightning round mode, I just want to deliver three thoughts that are on my mind right here in the first segment, and then we'll just coast the rest of the way with guests.
Let's do it.
And we'll let them give their opinion.
We'll wing it the rest of the way.
Topic number one. The Minnesota Twins yesterday, and we talked about this with Common, signed two new players to contract extensions. Of course, Max Kepler, 5 years, $35 million. Twins get a $10 million option on him in 2024. And then Jorge Polanco, 5 years, $25.75 million. Twins have options in 2024 and 2025 on Polanco. First year, $10.5 million. Second year, $12 million. And the reason I bring this up is I feel like an opinion of mine, not that it's a super controversial opinion, but I feel like an opinion I've had for years was validated and vindicated yesterday. Because, Ryan, we are 11 months away, 11 months ago. It's been 11 months since Jorge Polanco was suspended for using performance-enhancing drugs. Hasn't even been a year. Suspended for the first half of the season. Had the Twins made the postseason, he would have been out. Yet, less than a year after he gets the performance-enhancing drugs suspension and misses half the year, he's getting a brand spanking new contract for 5 years that could potentially be 7 years of team control.
You've got to be kidding me.
And I don't have a problem with the contract. But my point I've always had is the risk-reward level for Major League Baseball players to use steroids is very low risk and very high reward. Right? The risk is you get caught and you're out for 6 months and you miss, not 6 months, half a season. You miss half a season's pay. But you come back, the team doesn't care. They're still like, oh, we're still going to reward them. So if you're playing a Major League, and I'm one of those that I'm not a cheater. I'm not a guy who's going to cheat to win. I don't feel good doing it. I can't go to sleep at night. But I've always said, I understand why baseball players would take performance-enhancing drugs. And I don't even know if they use steroids anymore. But the risk is so small, just a small suspension, and you're not going to be punished long-term because you're still going to get paid for it. Your reward is, I put up some big numbers, I get the huge payday, and even if I put up those numbers and get the payday and get caught, I'm still going to get the payday. So, Major League Baseball, I know 20 years ago, became a huge thing with performance-enhancing drugs, and we're not going to allow any of these guys in the Hall of Fame anymore. Yet now, in 2019, I still don't think we care. And frankly, I don't think the fans care that much. I wasn't even brought up yesterday.
That's exactly right.
As long as he produces, the fans don't even care anymore. They just assume they're all doing it. There is nothing Major League Baseball is doing to deter their players from taking steroids, and it was proven again yesterday.
Yeah, they almost have to have some type of stipulation or language that says if you get caught, like, you're not going to be eligible for another long-term contract for another 5 years or some kind of window like that.
Well, you could do... I know it's hard to do a lifetime ban because all these people, they have excuses as to how it got into their system, and none of them ever intentionally put it in their system.
Okay.
And I guess technically someone could throw something in your drink, right, and ruin your career. But I do think the punishment should be more than what it is.
It has to be.
Half a season's not enough.
No, not at all, especially because you get the reward at the end.
Make it 2 years. Now you take out a guy's prime, and make it 2 years where, not getting paid. Or, I've always said, let's say you're in the middle of a contract. Let's say you get a Bryce Harper-type contract, which he's not getting, but it's 30 years, $300 million, and in year two, he gets caught performance-enhancing drugs, and you know he's never going to be the same because the reason he was good was because of the PEDs. To me, if you're in the middle of a contract, the team should be able to void that contract immediately if you get caught for steroids or PEDs.
I agree.
So give them a reason to not want to take it and make sure the game is clean. And frankly, baseball has gotten boring, and they don't care anymore. They want them to take steroids because they're hitting the ball out of the park.
That's exactly right. That's what puts butts in the seats.
All right, topic number two, if I can get to these in time here. This will be a quick one. I saw a story written about Richard Pitino's job security and how basically a bad call against Nebraska might have been the reason he got fired, and that's not right. And to me, if you're an athletic director and you're making your decision based on the one call in the Nebraska game, and that's going to be your deal breaker, your coach wasn't good enough to begin with. As an athletic director, your job is to go, is Richard Pitino, do I think this guy is going in the right direction as a head coach of our program, and will this team progress and improve over the next couple of years? If so, you keep him. If you have reasons to believe this is as good as we're going to get, it's just not going to get any better, it's the way it's always going to be, then you let him go. The result of an official making a bad call against Nebraska should have no input either way on that decision. If it does, you're not a good athletic director, period. And I'm sick of people doing, this is going to get him fired. No, if he does get fired, it's because the team fell apart last year, and I know they had excuses to fall apart because of all the injuries, and didn't meet expectations this year. They had other games that they lost to Illinois at home. Blew a big lead, if I recall.
They just got blown out that game.
I feel like there was another game in which they blew a big lead. Maybe it was the Michigan game. I don't know. But an athletic director is not going to make a decision on a coach based on the last 2 seconds of one game, period. And if he does, he shouldn't be the athletic director.
100%.
He should be out.
Yeah, you can't say that he's a great coach or a bad coach because of one call at the end of a game. It doesn't work that way.
Topic number three, three thoughts from Tenna. Maybe we'll have to do 10 thoughts next time. If we can get 10 in one segment. Maybe we'll do that for five questions. We'll just do 10. I'm going to have Michael Russo in next segment to talk about this whole thing in studio. But the story came out yesterday in The Athletic from Russo that basically Craig Leopold has given Fenton, the GM, the okay to, if you want to sell off some pieces, and that might mean we might miss the playoffs, if that's going to help our team out in the future, go do it. And I say, here, 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 because that was my biggest fear. To me, and I think when people hear sell, they think you're just, it's fire sale and you're going to get rid of everyone. That's, I don't look at it that way. But if you can get good deals for certain players, because this team's not going to the Stanley Cup. They're not. It's going to be difficult to make the playoffs. And if they make the playoffs, odds of them winning a first-round matchup are not great. And even if they do, they're not. This team's not going to the Stanley Cup. Sorry. We've seen this thing before. And I would love to be wrong on that. I would love nothing more than in the middle of June to come back here and say, I was wrong, the Minnesota Wild won the Stanley Cup. Believe me. I just don't see it. So, what's the point of doing basically the same thing you've been doing the last 5-6 years? And actually, in some of those years, you were buying as opposed to standing pat. But this team isn't going to buy. So, it's either you stand pat or you sell. And like I said, when people hear the word sell, they think, we're going to get rid of everyone. We're going to get rid of Stahl. We're going to get rid of Zucker and Coyle and Granlund. I don't believe that's to be the case. If you get good deals, right? Let's say Eric Stahl's not a part of your future, and I don't know if he is or not. I don't know what his contract demands are going to be during the summer, right? If he came back at $3.5 million again, I would definitely consider bringing him back. But, and I think he wants to be here, but if now you got to commit 2, 3, 4 years at his age, I'm not interested, or you got to, you know, raise the amount of money you have to give him, I'm not interested. But let's say Eric Stahl can get you a first-round draft pick. And he might, because Brian Boyle got a second-round draft pick. If Eric Stahl can fetch a first-round draft pick and he's not going to be here next year, and even if you have him, you might miss the playoffs, I'm sorry, you ship him. Because eventually you need to stop doing what they've been doing and just staying in the middle and staying in the middle. If you want to win a Stanley Cup, this organization has been awful in the first round and specifically the NHL draft forever. All right, the Reisbauer regime was terrible in the first round. Fletcher actually wasn't that bad in the first round. They've had some solid picks. Dumba was a solid pick. Granlund was solid. Brodin's okay. Zucker was a second round pick. They had some hits, not necessarily any home runs, but they had some singles and doubles. But their problem is they traded away all their draft picks. And in the NHL, especially when you're going younger, and especially when you're in a salary cap where you got those young guys that are going to make a very small amount of money early on in their years, you have to hit in the draft, and this organization never has. They've never hit a home run in the draft. Eventually, you need to figure that part out. And that might mean, if you trade Eric Stahl, you ain't making the playoffs. It's probably not going to make the playoffs this year, because you're not strong at that position. But that doesn't mean you're completely giving up on the season either. You still have some pieces around, and the Western Conference is so bad that you might be able to survive. But I'm glad that Craig Leopold gave the okay, because really it was going to be on the owner. Because to me, the best thing you can do is sell off a piece or two and try to accumulate some draft picks, or at least prospects, get young. So now next year and the year after that and 3 years from down the road, we actually have a shot instead of just annually being in this purgatory of the National Hockey League where we're not really good and we're not really bad. It's a bad spot to be in. So I applaud Craig Leopold of giving Fenton the okay. Doesn't mean you're just going to trade for the sake of trading. Doesn't mean you're just going to throw away the season. But if you got a good deal out there, and typically at this time of the year, a guy like Eric Stahl is pretty desirable. He can be a second-line center on a solid playoff team that's lacking in that position. I applaud the decision by Craig Leopold yesterday.
Yeah, and making the playoffs 6 years in a row, it's a nice thing. But the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again. We haven't gotten any better. We haven't improved, really, No. Our personnel. So you got to do something. You got to make some type of move. So I'm fully with you on that. I fully endorse what Leopold told Fenton.
Russo joins us next for the next two segments in studio to talk about everything regarding the Minnesota Wild, who they might trade, who they might sell, who they might buy, what direction they're going to go, how does the head coach feel about that. All that is next. And if Craig Leopold, if his team doesn't make the playoffs and he's lacking a little money, I have a way for Craig Leopold to make $1,000, and that's by the National Cash Contest. And Ryan, what is our keyword today in the National Cash Contest? Get a grand in your hand.
Yeah, today's the last day for a long time, so stay tuned and text this keyword right now. If you listen to the fan every hour for your keyword, you get to put a shot or a grand in your hand. Your keyword this hour is ball. Text the keyword ball to 200-200 to enter. Standard text messaging and data rates may apply.
Russo next.
shattered.
Blocked away in front of the goal that time by Stolar. Cleared by Philadelphia to center. And time is going to run out on the Wild on this Tuesday night in St. Paul as Philadelphia comes from behind and defeats the Minnesota Wild by a score of 5-4.
Bob Kurtz on the call. You heard it right here on The Fan as the Wild lost to the Flyers 5-4 on Tuesday night. They're back in action versus the lowly New Jersey Devils, the only team the Wild have beaten since the All-Star break. That game is tonight at 7:30 at XL Energy Center. I'm Brandon Molesky, and Michael Russo from The Athletic joins me for the next two segments in studio. What's going on, Michael?
How are you?
You're dressed awfully nice.
Yeah, I have to go from here right to the arena, and NHL Network TV hit at 3:30, so I'm like kind of leaving my place. I better put on the suit now.
Yeah.
So.
You got a busy day going on. You're on and
yeah.
All the radio stations. You're on here twice today because you're be on with yeah. Barrero at 5 o'clock.
Yeah. And then FSN tonight, NHL Network at 3:30. And then I'm about to record the Athletic Hour, which runs on Saturdays at 2 o'clock on the Plus.
What time will that be?
On the Plus, 2 p.m.
Where's the name of the place again?
Where's the name of the place again?
It's called The Athletic Hour.
The Athletic Hour.
AFN Plus.
So I'm guessing some guys from The Athletic talk about sports.
Yes, and give the promo code about 10 times.
I apologize because I did not listen last week when it was your first one.
Yep, John and me.
But if it's you and John, how do you guys go about having a conversation with each other? Because I see John talking Wolves, and he never makes it over to St. Paul. And you're over here talking Wild, the National Hockey League, and you don't make it over to Target Center.
Yeah.
How do you guys kind of... Well,
today,
intermingle with each other.
Today might be an easier one because we have Chad Graff with us who watches everything and knows everything about everything. So he'll be able to.
He can do Vikings for
you. He could be like the ping pong, and he's going to be our Vikings expert today.
So he's like the interpreter.
But you're right. Sometimes, I will admit, I'm a, like when I was in high school, my big like expertise was extemporaneous speaking. I was the guy on the debate team that did the extemporaneous speaking. So like everybody is in debate class and you go into these debate tournaments, but then you have one person that you go up to, you essentially go up to a speech and the microphone and they give you a topic and you just essentially BS, right? It's extemporaneous.
Sure.
So I've done that even with like when I go, come on here.
I understand why you'd be in that position. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I hate to say it like this. It's sort of laziness. I don't prep. I like to be just spur of the moment speaking.
Sure.
So we didn't exactly.
You should be on with Common.
No, we didn't exactly. He is a master of it.
Yeah.
But I'm like blown away when I listen to YouTube Banner and just the shticks there. But I will say like I'm sitting there with John last week and I'm like, you know, I really probably should have prepped for this. And Chad Abbott was producing, which was awesome. But he seemed to like it. He was laughing and everything. But you're right. I mean,
well, the best is when you have to use like terminology that I'm sure he won't understand.
But the cool part of the Athletic Hour, which to me made it go, because I'm not going to go there and pretend that I know what's going on with the Wolves. But what's cool part of the Athletic Hour is that we're trying to give an insight into also how we do our job. So like last week's episode was him talking about how he covered the Jimmy Butler mess, how he wrote the Tom Thibodeau firing story. And we talked about what was interesting about that is that, you know, a lot of times when you do this job and you think somebody's going to get fired and you have insight that somebody's going to get fired, you also do just reporter instinct stuff and say, all right, you know what? I mean, they're losing now. They've got 2 days between games, 3 days between games. Now's the time to do it. But the Wolves are actually playing well suddenly and winning and all, and they had a win that night. And so it'd be easy as a beat writer to have your radar off. So we talked a lot about that. And so I think it's going to be interesting for people to listen to just kind of hear how we all do our jobs. And, you know, today a perfect example is, you know, what I want to talk on the Athletic Hour is just what the last 24 hours have been like for me covering this mess with the Wild when you have the owner and the players saying we're making the playoffs, but behind the scenes I know that I'm writing the story any minute that says, hold on a second, the owner has already told the GM you can make some trades even if it costs us a playoff spot. So, you know, that creates a little bit of tension that a lot of the readers and the fans don't get to see. And so that's the type of stuff that we could talk about on the Athletic Hour, just shooting the breeze for an hour.
Well, and that's one of those topics. And obviously people can find your story at The Athletic, athletic.com and The Athletic app. That's one of those where yesterday, because in the past, I've always been, let's make sure we're trying to make the playoffs. And if you want to make a buy here, that's fine. I'm willing to give up a second or third round draft pick here to try to make a run. This team, Michael, this season has shown me, has given me no indication that they can make a long run and win a Stanley Cup. So it was always ultimately going to be on the owner of, can the owner sacrifice not getting some extra gate in the playoffs for let's try to make this thing a long term. And to me, I was encouraged by that. You got a new GM. You can't keep doing the same thing you've done the last three, 4 years. You got to change it up eventually. Yeah. So to me, it was an encouraging sign when I read your story.
Yeah, I mean, and again, a couple things. You know, first of all, to add to that, you're without Koivu and Dumba.
Yep.
And I don't care even if Dumba comes back, what's he going to be like? I mean, to expect him to be the guy that was just
on pace for 30 goals.
Yeah, throwing bombs at the net. And you just, and also, I mean, as we've seen, I mean, it's not easy to just step in at that time of year when everybody's going a gazillion miles an hour
different
and play
speed.
Defense.
Yeah.
I mean, so this team, there's not a lot of confidence right now inside the organization that they can go beat Winnipeg or Nashville in the first round, or if they cross over to the Pacific and play San Jose or Calgary. And which is sad. What's sad about this is that this is the year that the West is there for the taking.
Yeah.
There is a lot of
The reason they're still in a playoff spot is
so
bad.
To win once in the last seven games, and the fact that they're still clinging to the eighth. Ray Ferraro called it on the Jets telecast yesterday. He called it a turtle race for the last spot in the West. So that's the sad part, is that this is the year you kind of want to stay in it, because anything can happen. But they just don't seem to have the makeup. And I do think that the owner's finally been convinced of this. And he's and what was the final straw was him watching that meltdown the other day on home ice, which was absolutely inexcusable. You're playing a team that played at home the night before. They should be tired. They got in at 125 because of the weather that we had here. And
you get the lead.
And you got a 3-1 lead. Yeah. And you just absolutely
with a 4-minute power play.
Yeah, and you just melt it down. And so, I mean, we could break that down later in the show if you want, on how the craziness of the way they lost that game. But then I think the owner's just sitting there and they're like, all right, you know, we've won 13 out of 28 home games this year. We've lost 13 of the last 21 home games. This is ridiculous. We're getting booed off the ice every night.
Yeah.
And right now, everybody on the team up front is not playing well except for Parisi.
Yeah.
And so I just think that he...
And your young kids.
I think he's been convinced, right, Eriksson, Ek, and Cunnan.
Yeah.
And I think he's just been convinced by Paul Fenton it's time to make moves. Now, to get to what I wrote... in the Athletic, the players are obviously not giving up, and the coach is here to win and save his job. But and even though he has permission to tear this team down, this usually isn't the time that you can do something like that. Usually that is in the summer.
Yep.
But the point of the story was, look, he might make some moves here in the next couple of weeks that could break into the core, and here's why he's doing it. Because he has been told, all right, do what you see fit as long as it's getting us better here in the next couple of years. My guess is that he doesn't trade. I think that one of the three core forwards gets moved. Granlund, Zucker, or Coyle. I think it's going to be Coyle. I've talked to a couple GMs in the last couple of days that say he's extremely touchable right now, after, by the way, being last month untouchable.
Yep.
And his contract is just the easiest for a team that's trying to make the playoffs to also take on. Plus, you could justify it because of his ability. I mean, he is somebody
and
that you could throw.
Too.
Yeah, you could throw him on the third line center or right wing, or even up, as we've seen in the top six. And he is somebody that has, other than last year, had success in the playoffs before. And then all of a sudden, you are able to, you know, keep him next year at a quality price. And you know,
what kind of return can
that's
fetch?
The thing I was just going to say. Like it all to me depends on the return. Like like I don't think Paul should just throw away guys to throw away guys.
No.
Unless you're getting a quality return, meaning guy with term left on his deal that's a good player and or picks or prospects. And to me, this team, that to me should be where he goes. And if that is the case, if he's trading Coyle or whoever for prospects, you know that he's saying, all right, we might not make the playoffs this year, but you look at the prospect pool of this organization and there's very little there. You have Kaprizov, who we might not see for 2 years. And then, really, I mean, I guess you can include Cunnan, Greenway, and Eriksson Ek, but technically they're full-time NHL players. So the definition of prospect, they shouldn't be in there anymore.
Sure.
In fact, I just did my Hockey News Future Watch, and the Hockey News, in collaboration with Scouts and the Minnesota Wild, actually picked their top 10, and those three are no longer in
there. Yeah, I don't consider them prospects anymore.
So Kaprizov's number one, and next thing
who's after that?
Louis Bulpeau is two.
Yeah.
And there are guys like Connor Dewars, who's having a good year, Kovanov, who's having a good year. There are, you know, interesting players that potentially could erupt into top-tier prospects, but they got none. And I think he's starting to realize this, Paul Fenton. And so right now, that was the other thing I talked about in my story yesterday, is that...
And the young guys that are currently in the NHL,
right.
that are, you know, a couple of them playing well, but none of them are game breakers.
Exactly. And so what's good is that we're starting to see them get good quality ice time right now, and that's a good thing. But the other thing, I do think that when you look at this at the prospect pool out there, and you see from an alarming standpoint, from Paul Fenton's point of view, that all these teams that are already above you in the standings and how many prospects they haven't even had. Like, I mean, look at the Philadelphia Flyers. They got six forwards in their top nine that I would rather have than anybody on the Wild. Plus, they are stacked in the prospect pool. Like, you have all these teams that are just going to be coming with unbelievable
prospects. Vegas. That way,
Vegas is another team I'd look at if I were, excuse me, Paul Fenton. And there seems to be this fascination because Winnipeg really wants Eric Staal right now. And remember last year, which really coincidental, St. Louis was in a playoff spot when they traded Paul Stastny to their division rival for a first-round pick. But if I'm Paul Fenton, I say to Winnipeg, if it gets to the point where they actually are talking, I don't want a first-round pick. I want a prospect and a pick. You know, to me, it's like I would rather
try to get more.
What if Winnipeg goes and wins a cup and that pick's the 31st pick? You know, go get yourself, instead of a 18-year-old crapshoot, go get yourself a 20 or 21-year-old stud that is 2-3 years into development rather than a roll of the dice, and we might never see that guy.
Speaking of Staal, quickly before we go to break, I saw an interesting nugget in Pierre LeBrun's story, also of The Athletic, more of a national guy, on Staal, and you're probably already aware of this, but I had not seen it before, that Staal on his limited no-trade clause, or what he's got, like 10 teams where he had like no trade to, and basically all 10 of them are, you know, whenever you think of no trade, you think of it's the 10 worst teams in the league. We don't want them to go to Arizona. You don't want to go to, you know, Carolina and Florida. But he actually put the 10 really like playoff teams, kind of your perennial contenders, so that if they wanted to move him come trade deadline, that he'd basically be able to determine where he wants to go.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting because last summer, it's not like you can, you know, totally with 100% certainty say these are the playoff teams. But you're right. Just to show you how much Eric Staal wants to stay in Minnesota, what he did with his no-trade list is he actually took the teams that he thought might, at trade deadline, come looking for a top, not only just top teams, but teams that actually might need centers.
That have that
he
need.
He put them on his no-trade. So right now, if it gets to the point that Paul Fenton really does want to trade him to a team like Winnipeg or a team like Vegas or Toronto or whoever, Paul probably will have to go to him and say, will you waive?
Yeah.
Which is just fascinating. I've always said that about goaltending. I remember talking to a goalie last summer that has a modified no trade, and I said, you could absolutely ensure that you stay here because you know every team in the league that needs a number one goalie. So even though you might hate to play, like maybe if you're a goalie, you would not want to play, and I'm just going to make it up, Winnipeag. Well, you know Winnipeg's got Connor Hellebuck.
Philadelphia's always been one of those.
Yeah. So, well, there's probably, I can guarantee you that's on dubious. Who wants to ever play in Philly? But what I'm saying is that, you know, you could sit there and say, you don't put Montreal on your no-trade list. You don't put Nashville on your no-trade list.
Because they ain't coming for you.
They're not coming.
There's
so
an injury,
you can actually take your 10-team no-trade list and basically make it a 25-team no-trade list because you've now orchestrated with teams that need number one goalies, even though those teams you might actually be interested in playing for. That's, again, if you want to stay in Minnesota. So you're right. I talked to Staal about that. If you haven't read this Athletic story, I know that we pump it up all the time on the fan, but theathletic.com/IKnowRusso will get you 40% off. And I'm telling you, the interesting part of this story to me is not just even what I wrote at the top, which is the breaking news.
Yep.
It's Staal's quotes in the middle. Like, he's ticked. I mean, he's like, I don't even understand why they're – We're going to make the playoffs. Let me be part of this. He does not want to go anywhere, even though he knows at this point it might be unlikely that he's even going to get to resign here. But he doesn't even want to go anywhere, even if it means play in the playoffs elsewhere. He wants to help this team.
Well, I was going to ask you about resigning him because I guess it's potential you could trade him and then get him back during the summer and what kind of term he's looking for from a salary standpoint. I also want to ask you about Boudreau because I thought he had an interesting comment on Paul Allen's show yesterday before your story came out that caught my ears when I heard it for the first time, and then when your story came out, maybe it made a little sense to me. All of that and other players that might be being sold by the Minnesota Wild. Next with Michael Russo.
It's Free Movie Friday, and Adam Tickets, the best app to book your tickets, wants to hook you up with tickets to see Isn't It Romantic? Now in theaters, it's a hilarious new comedy starring Rebel Wilson, Liam Hemsworth, and Adam Devine. So text LOW the keyword low to ATOM1. That's low to 2866-1 for your chance to win. Standard data and text message rates may apply.
Brandon Molesky in for the Common Man. Michael Russo with me for one final segment. He'll be back at 5 o'clock with Dan Barrero later today. Big-time story on The Athletic that you broke yesterday. Before that, I had heard Bruce Boudreau on with Paul Allen, and he, unprompted, you know, PA did not lead him into this statement, did the old, you know, I'm not going to go Joe Namath on here, but I'm guaranteeing we're going to make the playoffs. And as I'm listening, I'm like, God, that was just odd. That was just weird. And for me, I thought, man, there's psychologically something going on in this locker room where he felt he needed to do, like, the rallying cry here. Like, to me, it was a sign of desperation.
Yeah.
Your story comes out, and then I thought, all right, he obviously knew of the conversations between Fenton and Leopold and had heard of it and said, I'm going to get out in front of this. And for some reason, because really, the Leopold-Fenton story is kind of the end for Boudreau, right? Because, I mean, if the team doesn't make the playoffs, I think it's...
Yeah,
it's likely he gets fired as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you he's definitely safe till the end of the season, and then it's just a matter of if Paul wants his own guy, does Craig approve eating essentially $3 million in the final year? It'll be completely up to Craig. If Craig doesn't want him fired or doesn't want to eat that money, Bruce is back. But I think the common feeling is that Dean Evason's the next coach of the Wild. He's on Bruce's staff right now. I mean, again, that's total conjecture. But regardless of what you're saying, in terms of Bruce, there's no doubt that I would think that he would know that. But I will tell you, and again, I don't know if this is the reason why he did it, but I did give him a heads up that this story was going to be coming out because I didn't want him to be shocked. You know, so I did let him know that I was writing this. And so, again, I don't know if that's why he did it, but I do think that he is not, he's concerned that if all, you know, who they trade, he wants to make the playoffs. Everybody has different you know, strategies here. Paul Fenton is for the good of the franchise for long term.
Yep.
Craig owns the team, so he's the same kind of way. Bruce, like the players, in a lot of ways, like, there's a short career. I want to win now. I don't know if my job's on the line, so I am going out fighting. And his job is not to worry about 3, 4 years, 5 years down the line. His job is to try to make the playoffs now and go and win a cup. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, I completely understand where Bruce is coming from here. And he's well aware that without Mikko Koivu and Matt Dumba, if all of a sudden you start trading Jason Zucker and Charlie Coyle and Jonas Brodin or whoever, Eric Staal, they're certainly not making. I mean, Eric Staal right now, by the way, I know I don't want to make some Wild fans that hate Koivu drive off the road, but if you don't realize the importance of Mikko Koivu right now, then you just don't know the sport. I mean, not only the fact that they can't shut down guys like Giroux, Couturier, and JVR right now, or win a big draw, but look at Eric Staal. He is being smothered.
He's laboring out there.
He is smothered. He is so insulated and protected by having Koivu in the lineup that right now it's just easy to check Eric Staal. You just draw everybody on Eric Staal. And that's just the reality. He doesn't have a point in 6 games. He doesn't have a goal in 7. And so I think Bruce is aware that if all of a sudden they just dish away Staal here, they've got no shot without Mikko. So I you know, again, this is total conjecture. I've not talked to Bruce about why he said what he did or his motivations there, but I can tell you that he did know that the story that I was writing yesterday was on the horizon. And I'm sure there's also communication between Leopold, him, and Fenton, I would assume, I would hope, and that, you know, that he's aware of what of the conversations going on in the office and who they're thinking about moving.
So you've talked about Coyle and Staal as potential trade bait. I think Jason Zucker is an interesting name. Yeah. Clearly had a good season last year, underachieving, I think, a little bit this year, first year of a brand new contract.
Yeah.
And you know the contract stuff better than I do, but I believe July 1st there's some sort of no trade clause.
Yeah,
or
a modified no trade clause.
So, is there any urgency to trade him before this deadline or before July 1st? Is he a name that's
being thrown
out?
That if they get to a point where they just say, you know what, now's the time, you want to do it before July 1 where you completely control, you have 30 teams to deal with as opposed to 20 teams to deal with. Because he's got the 10-team no trade, but remember, as we just said, with what Dubnyk could do and what Staal could do, and the way that they strategically work their no trades, is that Zucker can do the same thing. And that's the thing why no trades are dangerous for any GM. You know, I think the GMs thought, oh, this is brilliant. We're going to have now 10 no trade teams, and we have more flexibility and things like that. But you could easily go through any team's depth chart and come up with a pretty good way and dictate who still, you can make that from a 10 sure. team no trade to a 18, 19 just by knowing those depth charts.
Are there rules in the CBA with terms of contract where it has to be 10 team or all
no,
the
no,
teams
it could
or,
be anything. It could be 8,
you
could be, yeah.
You could do 17 if you wanted.
Absolutely, yeah.
10's just kind of a...
Backstrom once had a no trade that was like statistically threshold where all of a sudden it would kick in, if I remember correctly, where he actually would have to hit certain thresholds to like prove his no trade. If I could be totally
interesting
mixing up things in my head, who knows. As I told you in the break, I used to remember everything. Now I can't remember anything. So, but in terms of Zucker, just to get back to just Zucker, he's been very disappointing this year, especially lately. And I think he's starting to drive the management nuts. And I absolutely think that he, and what I ended my story with yesterday is like, look, you know, even if these moves don't happen now in the next 11 days before the trade deadline, the reality is that he does have now the green light to pretty much make moves, and it would probably happen this summer. And a lot of these type of trades usually happen in the summertime. It is very hard at the trade deadline to make long-term significant moves to your organization because the teams that you're trying to trade with are teams that are just gearing up for the playoffs. They usually want the Eric Staal types because they now can get rid of them essentially in the offseason. Yep. And so
more cap space available.
And
so
in the summer, you are able to also take a lot more time, go through depth charts. People are absolutely trying to reinvent their team. And as we saw with the Wild last year, once you get past July 1, you're kind of screwed. Once you get past July 1, it's almost impossible to make a trade before the year. It's now all about free agency. And that's why, I remember writing going into free agency once they didn't make a trade on June 30th, like, look, they're going to still try. But now we're really into the, quote, tweaking stage. You know, even though tweaking was the name of the game last summer, he did have clearance to move certain players as long as they were still in a win-now mode. So now, yep. In other words, you could move Niederreiter and Zucker, which he did try to do. At one point, Nino was potentially on the move to L.A. for Toffoli and Martinez. Arizona was another one. They were talking about Christian Dvorak, who coincidentally had the Matt Dumba injury, the pec injury, and hasn't played a game this season, and Max Domi. So he was trying to make hockey trades for, you know, win now mode still.
Yep.
Where now all of a sudden, you get past July 1 and it's almost impossible to do that. And next thing you know, they're really tweaking and they added 3 12th forwards and 1 5th defenseman.
Take one call. Dave in Bloomington, you're on with Michael Russo. What's going on, Dave?
Yeah, this call's about Dubnyk, but I just want to state the strength of the Wild is Suter, Spurgeon, Dumba, Brodin. Their top four D is among the best in the league, both offensively and defensively. My deal with Dubnyk, I read this stat, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Russo, but I read this stat where the Wild as a team are among the best teams at preventing high area scoring chances.
Yep.
And Dubnyk is one of the worst at preventing goals in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dubnyk is overrated. He's never going to take you anywhere in the playoffs if you get in the playoffs, as he's proved in the past. What do you think he's worth, and would they consider trading? Because I say trade him.
Thanks, Dave. The teams that would want him would be of your – so, it's just fun. It's almost like you bugged the room because Brandon and I were talking about this in between the break about Dubby and whether you trade him, whether it's now or wherever. And he, by the way, has a modified no trade where also he, again, as I said it, I mean, you as a goalie, if you have a 10-team no trade, you can make that a 25-team no trade easily because you're not putting teams like Nashville, Montreal, like you go through and you look at all the teams that have number one goalies and half the teams have legit ones. So now all of a sudden you take the other 10 and you put it on there. And now you have, it'd be very hard to trade them.
Yeah.
But to get to Dave's question, at this point, to trade him, you have to look at the playoff teams that need a number one goalie. And there's really the only one that I can think of that to me does is Calgary, but can they afford him? Because technically they have Mike Smith there. They're just not using him.
Yep.
And Rittich right now stinks. So maybe they are looking for a goalie, but can you acquire a $4.5 million goalie right now? I think that'd be very difficult. But if you go through the standings right now, well, Winnipeg doesn't need a number one goalie. Nashville doesn't need a number one goalie. Right now, St. Louis, I don't think that's going to happen. They're Binnington kids playing unbelievable. I mentioned Calgary, but San Jose's got Martin Jones. Fleury's in Vegas. Obviously, Dallas has a couple goalies and Bishop there. Tampa doesn't need a goalie. Toronto doesn't need a goalie. Boston doesn't need a goalie. Islanders maybe, but Leonard and Greiss have been great. Washington doesn't need a goalie. Columbus might need a goalie if they trade Bob.
Who knows?
Montreal's got Price. Pittsburgh's got Murray. So to your point, I get the thing, add Dubnyk to it. Very unrealistic right now. You know, unless you're calling Calgary and trying to make it work. I just don't, which by the way is his hometown.
Well, and the other issue is then, you need a goalie eventually.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not, well, that, it's not, and it's that, not that, that easy is, to get a goalie, number
to me
one
the
goalie.
Big thing. It's I hear you, but, Stalock is the backup of this team. They are not going to trade Doobie and go with Stalock forever. And Kakanen's a young goalie that's having a good year in Iowa, but you want to develop him there. You don't want to ruin him and rush him, and you still don't know if this is an aberration or not.
Yeah.
So it's easy for all of us to say, well, Dubnyk stinks. He cost him the Philly game, whatever. Which I'm not saying I agree with. I'm just saying I get where fans are coming from here. You know, fans the other night, I said on one of my podcasts that, that's as disappointed as I've been with Doobie. Like, that's a game he's got to figure out a way. I don't care that pucks are deflecting or whatever. You've got to figure out a way.
They're always deflecting.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a way on that fifth goal. I don't care when it's 4-4. You got to get him to overtime. You have to. So I get the frustration with Dave. I just don't think it's realistic. You've got to look at this right now from a standpoint that there are 16 teams buying, and now you're talking about the goaltender of the Minnesota Wild. Well, of those 16 teams buying, who needs a number one?
Yeah.
And right now, I don't think Calgary is going to make that type of major move when you have Mike Smith on the roster at that type of price.
And if you want a number one, you're going to have to spend more money than you're paying Dubnyk next year.
And in terms of Philly right now is still outside the playoff spot. And there's a lot of talk that Philadelphia is going to acquire Cam Talbot. And if you're Chuck Fletcher, one, you've kind of been there, done that with Doobie. But also going into next year, I mean, your future still is technically Carter Hart. So having Doobie there kind of doesn't make sense there. So, I just don't think it's realistic.
You're on with Dan Burrow at 5 o'clock today. You're hosting Beyond the Pond tomorrow with Pat Micheletti. And then tomorrow on KFAM Plus at 2 o'clock, it's the Athletic Hour with John Krasinski and Chad Graff. You can listen. That's on 96.7 FM here in the Twin Cities. You can also listen on the iHeartRadio app or anywhere where you get your podcast.
Yes.
Thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
And by the way, if you want me to answer any questions on the Vikings, Wolves, or Wild, tweet me right now because we're going to go record this right this second.
Well, if you want to stick around,
they're going to answer the questions on the
Andrew
Vikings
Wiggins, and the your Wolves. Thoughts.
Yeah. John, your thoughts.
Thanks, Michael. Yep. Appreciate it. Ryan Donaldson, we got 5 questions next.
We do indeed, and I took some 534 suggestions from Rubes on Twitter. Find out what controversial question I'll ask Tenna B next.
Coming out, Tenna B in. You're listening to Brandon Molesky on The Fan.
Be next segment, Mark Rosen about an hour from now, Brandon Molesky, Ryan Donaldson, we're in for the Common Man Dan Cole now.
Time now for 5 questions. Well, actually 3, but 5 sounds like more than 4. Brought to you by Green Mill Restaurant and Bar. Question number 1.
All right, Tenneby, as I teased going into break here, I took some suggestions from Rubes on Twitter, trying to help me and give myself some help for the 534 segment here that we have right now. And the best question, most controversial question, I believe, came from an at Bill A-H. At Bill A-H, who wonders, he's going way off the board here. Who is the best Muppet ever, Tenneby?
The best Muppet ever?
The best Muppet ever.
Well, I saw the question, and he said it had to do with the
The Sesame Street?
60-year anniversary of Sesame Street.
We can include Sesame Street.
Because I'm not really a Muppet guy, but...
Okay, let's let Sesame Street be part of the mix.
I never really... I didn't watch a whole lot of television when I was a young child, especially like kids' shows. I really didn't start watching TV until Saved by the Bell was on a half-hourly basis for about 2 straight hours every afternoon when I got home from school. So even like when I was, 7, 8, 9 years old, I felt like I was watching like sitcoms. I don't recall too much Sesame Street or any young kids' shows, but I've been watching Sesame Street now that I have 2 young children myself, and frankly, I'm a little bitter they don't want to watch more of it, because there's a lot of bad, bad young kids' shows on, Ryan. You'll figure this out someday. And every day you go, all right, what do you want to watch? And then we want to watch this monster truck show, and it's just awful. And I'm like, you guys don't want to watch Sesame Street? Because adults like Sesame Street, and it's kind of fun to watch, and I like the letter of the day, and Cookie Monster's the best. And no, we don't want to watch that. We want to watch this terrible show. So I never really watched the Muppets. I mean, I know Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy and all that good stuff. Even Sesame Street, they have phased out Big Bird and Bert and Ernie. I mean, it's all Elmo now. Elmo's a star. Cookie Monster's best supporting actor.
No Snuffleupagus, I guess?
No, Snuffleupagus, yeah. See, all those old characters are barely register anymore.
That's unbelievable. It's kind of emotional.
So you said Muppet. They're technically monsters. One of my favorite characters in Sesame Street is an actual human being, so I don't know if this counts. But Mr. Noodle is hilarious. You only ever see him in the Elmo's World skits. And now, they've also expanded on the Mr. Noodle thing. They have like a Mrs. Noodle now, and they have like Mr. Noodle's kid. And it's just, they're not the original Mr. Noodle. Mr. Noodle's hilarious. But if you want to go monsters, I mean, you gotta like Elmo. He's pretty sweet. He's cute. Nicest monster ever. Can sing. But, I mean, Cookie Monster's hilarious. What he won't do to get cookies. And then the manner in which he eats the cookies. Like, he doesn't just take a bite and maybe just throw one in. He'll take 20 cookies and just smash them in his mouth at the same time.
Yeah, it's the best.
So I would have Cookie Monster pretty high on my Monsters from Sesame Street power rankings.
I like that.
And I just realized I went away from the page I wanted. There we go.
Question number 2. It's time now for multiple choice.
All right, Tenneby, the Star Tribune posted an article that highlighted 5 of the people most recently hired in the Twin Cities sports teams the last few years, and they all happen to be very young, in their 30s. That list includes PJ Fleck, Lindsey Whalen, Richard Pitino, Rocco Baldelli, and Ryan Saunders. Tenna, of this group of young coaches, who will end up having the best career here in Minnesota?
Well, one, like the young coaches now is becoming all the fad, right? And basically Sean McVay changed the way they scout NFL coaches, because he's an NFL coach at 33. 9 years ago, I was named the high school head hockey coach at Coon Rapids as a 30-year-old. All right, so, well, that didn't go too well for me. But let's just say that started the youth trend with coaches here locally. I think they saw that trend going on. I think I was the trendsetter on that one.
You need to get some credit. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Baldelli, I know nothing about, so it's really hard to have a strong opinion on him. Saunders, were only, 13, 14 games into his tenure? And I'm sorry, but your players are what they are, and your talent is what it is, and just NBA players aren't going to want to come to Minnesota. So I think Saunders can be an all right coach, and they might be stuck kind of where the Wild are right now, where they're just in NBA purgatory, constantly on the bubble for a playoff spot, maybe 7th, 8th seed every once in a while. PJ Fleck, next year is his big year. We've seen the recruiting classes now. They get all the best rankings that we've ever had here. But until I see the results on the field, next year when you have a soft schedule, bringing back a lot of your players, and what is it, year 3 now of PJ Fleck, where you've had a couple recruiting classes.
Depends if you count year 0 or not.
Well, yeah. So next year is going to be a big determination on him. What are my other options? Lindsey Whalen. And who is the other one?
I think that you covered them all. Pitino, Whalen, Fleck, Saunders, and Baldelli.
Lindsey Whalen's going to be the best coach here.
I like that.
Lindsey Whalen. In 2 years, It's the Minnesota Gophers women's basketball team will be a perennial top 15 team. They're going to be in the upper half of the Big Ten on a consistent basis because, and I think we've seen it now with this winning streak they're on because, what, they were 3-7 in the Big Ten. They had a bad stretch of basketball there. Now they've won, what, 4 games in a row, 7-7 in the Big Ten, 18-7. So they've kind of put themselves back in a position. I don't know women's basketball well enough to determine where they are in terms of can they make the NCAA tournament or not. I'm guessing they're in the mix or on the bubble. But after beating Purdue by 20 last night and winning in the most important time of the game when they outscored Purdue 20-2 in the final 10 minutes, even when they're 3-7, and she doesn't know everything about coaching probably at this point. It's her middle of the first year. You can't just transition from player to coach and just have it all figured out because it's a completely different job. But she just has this will to win. And I think you're seeing that with the run they're on now. It doesn't mean they're going to win the whole thing. Doesn't even mean they're going to make the NCAA tournament this year. But she has a will to win and a competitive fire that she will never accept losing. And we always talk about the University of Minnesota, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, whatever sport you're talking about, boys or men and women, of keeping players from Minnesota inside the state here. She's an iconic enough name. She's a massive enough name where your best players from the state will stay here.
Brilliant!
Can't say that about the football team. Can't say that about the men's basketball team, though I know they got Oturu. Heck, we can't even say that about our hockey team anymore. Our men's hockey team, players from the state of Minnesota, in hockey, for boys hockey, yes, I do think ultimately Minnesota's the number one choice, but it's not a slam dunk anymore. You've got Duluth, you've got St. Cloud, you've got Mankato. North Dakota's always going to be an issue right on the border for all their, you know, all your kids up in the northwest part of the state. Heck, Wisconsin's grabbing some players every once in a while. So you're not keeping, I'm not certain that they're keeping all the top, and now we got a new head coach, obviously, and Bob Motzko, and maybe that'll change. But in recent years, even the men's hockey team, which should be the easiest to keep your best players here, can't do it. The women's basketball program will be the one where all your best players in girls' basketball in high school, they're all going to want to stay here.
Brilliant!
And she's a big enough name where I do think you can get recruiting talent from elsewhere. So I'm going to go with Winzy Whalen as number one on that list.
Question number 3.
All right, Tennessee, the NBA All-Star Weekend is upon us, and we all know that
Next question.
I'm getting to that. The All-Star Games get a bad rap nowadays.
Yeah.
And nobody really cares about the All-Star Games anymore. Of the four major sports, which of the four major sports is your favorite All-Star Game? The NFL, NBA, MLB, or NHL? And who right now is our best Minnesota All-Star athlete?
Oh, my gosh. I'll have to think about that one.
Yeah, that's a tough question.
As for the All-Star games, they're basically all unwatchable. I would put Pro Bowl probably as dead last. I'd put NBA All-Star game second to last.
Check.
The NHL, I guess if I have nothing else going on, I'll turn on the 3-on-3. I've done it in the past where I've watched the 3-on-3 overtime. I do enjoy the current NHL format more than the past because at least they're not giving it 100%. But when it's 3-on-3 in open ice, you have to play a little bit of defense. Not that you're going to give it your all, but and at least they're playing for $1 million, so they'll try a little bit. But I didn't watch it this year, and I didn't. The skills competition for the NHL does really nothing for me. The NBA skills competition does nothing. I couldn't even tell you what they do for the Pro Bowl anymore. I don't even think they do football-related activities. I think you have like linebackers like throwing at targets now. Major League Baseball, as much as I despise, we got to have every single player play, and we've expanded the rosters, and every team in the league has to be represented, so we don't really have the best players there. And we let the fans do the voting, so they basically will vote in the same big names from the same big markets all the time. It is the one sport that if you're pitching and you're hitting, you have to try. So I don't like that I'm only going to see this guy for one inning and then he's gone and we're going to see 12 different pitchers pitch in the game. But at least it resembles an actual Major League Baseball game in terms of the effort level. So I will go Major League Baseball. The second part of that question, who's our best Minnesota All-Star right now?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Kind of slim pickings, too.
It's no one on the Wild.
Yeah.
Because Devin Dubnyk was your all-star, and he's not all-star caliber. That's just one of those where they had to put someone in. And they're too loaded at the forward position, so Zach Parise can't get in because you got to get all the forwards from elsewhere in the Central Division. Baseball, we don't have an all-star. So it's got to be either the Big Meow or someone on the Purple.
I would debate it's between Harry and Cat, but I think you got to give
Harry
the nod
the
to Cat.
Yeah. We don't really have that big, huge name on the Vikings. We have like a lot of good players.
Right.
And a year ago, I would have said Xavier Rhodes. He had a down year. I'm still not ready to give up on him. It seems like people all want to give up on him after one media. And I don't even think he was horrible. He was just not as good as we'd seen him play before.
Right.
He went from being completely shut down cornerback to, oh, he's good. I'm still not ready to give up on him. I'd still give him another shot next year if you don't trade him for an offensive lineman. Yeah, you got it. You got mostly because the NBA is an individual sport, you got to go with Carl Anthony Towns, I guess, as your biggest all-star. You probably had more questions lined up, but I'm a lot more long-winded than
That's
I should
okay.
have been.
That's okay.
And I want to make sure the listeners get a grand on their hand. Lil B is next, but how can listeners win $1,000 in the National Cash Contest?
It's super simple. All you got to do is listen to the fan every hour for the keyword in your shot to put a grand in your hand. And this hour, your keyword is jock. Text the keyword jock to 200-200 to enter. Standard text messaging and data rates may apply.
We'll see how Lil B's Valentine's Day went. And an old TV show on Married with Children called Psycho Dad. One of my favorite bits on Married with Children. I think I might have been a little bit of a psycho dad last night. Maybe we'll get to that story next.
It's the Green Giants, Brandon Molesky, filling in for Common on The Fan.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
She's the smoke show from Glencoe. Lil B. You smile every time I say that.
I like it.
It's not often you know, I get a little smile back when flirting with a female, so it's kind of refreshing. I need to get Common out of here more often.
Yeah.
What's going on, Lil B?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Good. I'm outstanding. I do want to get to your Valentine's Day in a little bit, but first.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about Basilica Block Party coming
up. Me too.
You guys obviously hit a home run with this lineup. I think it's maybe the best lineup you guys have ever put together.
You think so?
In my opinion. Now, not that I can go back 10 years and recall exact lineup, but in terms of my desire to go.
Yes.
So, by the way, I ask you on a quarterly basis for concert tickets.
Here, hang on, let me get up.
Can you put...
what do you need?
Friday, July 12th, Basilica Block Party.
Okay, and that'd be how many tickets? Here it comes.
If I could get four, that would be nice.
There it is. Okay.
So I can invite some friends.
I never know what's worse. When people ask me for more than two, or my other pet peeve is when they go, can I get five?
Five?
Like, odd number. It drives me insane.
Who asked for five?
People ask for tickets in odd numbers all the time. Three, five. Can I get seven?
That's really weird.
Yeah. First of all, you're asking for way too many. But also, in the business we work in, everything happens in pairs.
Yeah.
So if I give you three, you have now messed up the rest of my inventory for everything else I'm about to do.
Yeah, because you can't give three to somebody else.
Right.
That's why I wanted four instead of three. I was thinking of you when I asked.
Now, I'm sure you were. Now, just for the one night, or can I set you up with both? And would you like VIP?
Well, usually there's always just like one band or one night where I'm like, that's really great. Mm-hmm. And I usually only go to one night. I'm not a both nights. Mm-hmm. This might be a both night kind of
it is.
Concert. So first, I recognize this name from the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know much about her. I think I'd heard the name before, but I couldn't tell you one song from hers. And then I just saw her just carrying trophies around with her everywhere from winning the Grammys. How'd you guys get Kacey Musgraves here? Is that all you?
No.
Oh.
That's a good get.
That's a heck of a get.
That's one of those that you kind of take a chance on, and because you kind of see it, you know, scaling the way you want it to scale.
Sure.
And then the Grammys hit. And it was, you're just...
Can you scout for the Minnesota Wild? Get some talent that might be good in a couple of years, and let's get to it early?
I'm happy to help.
Yeah.
Did you watch
it? So basically, you scouted Casey Musgraves. You said, she's not at this level yet, but she potentially could be.
And she's one of those that has this unique following that's very loyal. So she was just here, and the show sold out. So you kind of look at that stuff, too. I mean, there's a lot of factors out there.
Did she raise her price after the Grammys?
I bet she did. And if she didn't, she should have. But they had her locked in before that.
I was going to say, so if you're locked in at a price, she can't she can't change her demands of, by the way, I need you to double what you're going to give me.
Not going to work.
Not going to work.
Already
I'm sure she'll
contract.
Be okay.
Yeah, she's going to be all right.
Yeah, I think she'll be all right.
But if you did not get shivers during her performance at the Grammys, you're dead inside. And I was not a big Casey Musgraves, like, she's always been kind of this weird eccentric. I think she even opened up SNL this year, and I watched it, and I was like, I just don't know if I get it. I get it now.
So now she's...
It's so good.
So she's technically a country artist, but it sounds like maybe a little bit of a crossover into singer-songwriter. Would that be accurate?
Yes. We are currently playing her on Cities 97.1 uniquely Twin Cities.
And what station is that?
That's Cities 97.1.
Do you guys have a website there?
Cities971.com.
And that's probably a website you want to know today, because if you want to get Basilica Block tickets that we're talking about.
Buy them right now.
Right now.
Yep.
So that's a big name.
You can also hear on K102 as Bossberg is screaming at me through the radio. She's played on both. He's going to get mad if I don't say it.
Can you get Gaga and Bradley Cooper there just for one song? I just want to see those two perform. What did you think of Gaga performance of the Grammys?
I didn't really like it.
I didn't either, and I love that song.
Yep, it's a great song. She made it weird. And it was
way too weird.
It was unnecessary. But here's the problem, and I understand it. Here's the thing. You're not going to get Bradley Cooper to show up every time she wants to perform that song. Now, I would also say this is the Grammys. It's
for that event. He should have been there.
Right.
But he probably didn't want to sing on that stage because he's probably not a great singer.
No. And they're probably going to get them to do something at the Oscars and whatever. But don't ruin the song. It was weird and unnecessary.
Like when she just started singing his verse, I'm like, that's fine. Just sing it like the way it's sung. And just that's one of those songs that's so good. Just keep it the same way.
Right.
Like, and I know she's Gaga and everything's got to be eccentric and she's got to change everything and she's unique and different. But just keep it the same way because she did kind of ruin that song.
I mean, that song is in the top five every single week. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was weird. But I did think that the Grammys did a very, very good job this year, better than they have done in a very long time, where I feel like I haven't been able to say I liked the entire show. Even the people I didn't know as well, I thought were amazing. It was a very, very well done show. When Alicia Keys, she was kind of annoying me with the hosting, when she pulled out two pianos and played both of them.
I could have listened to that all night.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Do whatever you want.
I turned to my wife at the time and said, she should just do an album or just do a concert of doing everyone else's songs and I would listen.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was amazing. It was so good.
But she does have a lot of positive energy. I didn't realize this is kind of my first extended look at her.
Yes.
She's very...
What is a good word? I mean, she's just all about love.
Everything's
and
great.
Music
love
and peace
and,
and let's all come together.
Sometimes I just want to be
kinda
negative.
Kind of like me.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm not on the right page. Donaldson's distracted.
I seem to care.
Yeah. Funny, engineers only come in during the Common Man show when I'm filling in.
Respect.
Can't do it at 3:00. So you got Musgraves.
Yep.
Saturday night, I would say the other big name is I'm Yours.
Mraz.
Jason Mraz.
Yep.
Is he still delivering hits or is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he is.
That's a huge song.
That's a great song.
Hits and other jams.
Yeah. But, he's got so many from the past, too. His new stuff is great, but it's going to be one of those where like, he's going to start playing songs and you go, oh, I forgot about that one. I forgot about that one. He is an awesome performer.
And then also that same night you have, this is, this is right in my wheelhouse in terms of my age.
Yep.
It's a band that the song gets kind of annoying after a while. It's a band that guys my age never wanted to admit you liked it.
Right.
And frankly, I didn't ever buy the album or anything. Mm-hmm. It's a good song.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Even though I have no idea what they're singing about. The chorus is about Umbop. I don't know what that is. Sounds like a kid's toy. But you're still, everyone's going to tap their toes when that song comes out. And apparently they're still like a big thing. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll come to town and do clubs and smaller theaters and they sell them out. They've learned how to do it.
So those are just the big names.
Yeah.
Right? And then you've got three other groups/artists that I love that are right up my alley that I'm actually looking forward to the most, even more than those big names.
Okay.
As you know, I like the Jayhawks.
You love the Jayhawks.
Because I went and saw them. They're probably my favorite band. Saw them in December at First Avenue. They're outstanding. And as my buddy said to me at the time, they don't really have that I'm yours type hit that Jason Mraz has. But if you just want a band that has 20 songs that are B-level songs, right? They don't have the A-pluses, but they've just got 20 or I'd say even more than 20. 20 songs that are all Bs. Mm-hmm. They're just all really good. So when you get them in a concert, like every song, they just reel them off.
Yep.
They're all jams. I love Semisonic. Right? And in more, they're more than just Closing Time. They've got a lot of good songs.
Closing Time. Yeah. Great point.
And then Common and I both share a love, and I think I kind of was introduced to him through Common and through this through Cities 97. Lizzie's got a couple
Lizzie.
Of
jams. Yeah. Yeah, Lizzie.
When I'm Alone is a great song.
Yeah, Lizzie's good.
And she and I've seen her at Basilica before, because she's been there before, and she's a very good performer.
And she's done some, like, you know, our Live at the Lake events, kind of those, like, acoustic on-the-water deals. Yeah.
So she's a really good singer, really good performer. And then there's a band that I've seen the name before, so I know they're relatively popular, but I don't know any of their music. Are they called Churches?
They're called Churches.
Because there's a V instead of the U.
Yep. So it's Corey's favorite band.
So I'm not going to see that one then.
No, you will. You'll love it. Yeah. So there's a
Corey's
woman
favorite
in the
band is 311.
Well, they're second.
Second favorite, yeah.
There's a woman in that band whose voice is just completely ridiculous.
Really?
Yep.
What kind of music do they play?
I don't know if it's like...
Because the name just looks like a heavy metal, hard rock type of name. Are they, but...
I don't think it's heavy metal. It's maybe more, I don't know if you'd say alt-ish.
Alt?
Maybe Sludgy will text me.
He ain't listening.
Well,
he's napping.
Lucky. I don't know how to explain it. What I will say is, I think them performing on a big stage outdoors is perfect.
That's their thing?
That's what they need to be doing.
Yeah.
It's, her voice is going to be ridiculous.
Okay. So it's a female singer? Or do they have multiple singers?
Multiple.
Okay.
But she kind of leads the charge.
And then I'll be honest, I haven't heard of any of the other bands. Is there anything that I'm missing or that sticks out to you with the rest of them? You got Flora Cash, Metric, Johnny Swim, Yam House. Great name. Rustin Kelly, Anderson East, Dawes. I'll be honest, I haven't heard any.
So Rustin is married to Casey Musgraves.
Really?
And here, Sludgy just texted
me. So Rustin's a dude.
Synthetic pop?
Synthetic pop.
Question mark?
So like the Cars?
I guess. I don't know.
Who?
Maybe like Weezer?
I don't...
Okay.
He said synth pop.
Okay. Synth pop.
Anderson East used to date Miranda Lambert. That's why I know him.
So we got some people that are popular for who they've married.
Flora Cash has a very big song on Cities 97 right now.
Does she? What's that song?
And also on Alt. You're putting me on the spot. And I just intro'd it on Cities 97, and now I can't think of the name.
Would it be You're Somebody Else or $18?
Yep, You're Somebody Else.
See if I've heard this one.
See, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
This is July. You're hanging out. It's 80 degrees, and you're having a beer, and you just want to listen to sweet bangers.
I saw the part of you that only when you're older you'll see too. You'll see too.
Yeah.
And Johnny Swim. So some of these bands have like that, like you haven't heard of them, but they've got these like cult followings.
Sure.
And people are just going to lose it.
Okay,
excited.
I want to hear about your Valentine's Day and a psycho dad moment for me last night. That's next with Lil B.
You're listening to Brandon Molesky on The Fan.
Listen to The Fan Thursday, February 21st at 7:20 a.m. for a major concert announcement. It's Twin Cities Summer Jam, and it's hitting Canterbury Park July 18th, 19th, and 20th. Get the artist lineup and on-sale info Thursday at 7:20 a.m. Twin Cities Summer Jam, the three-day music festival where rock, pop, and country come together in our very own backyard.
Lil B, will West Side Connection be at the Basilica Block Party?
Who?
West Side Connection.
I don't know what that means. It's
the group that made the song Bow Down.
Oh, well, this isn't the song you guys are supposed to play when we come back.
Yeah. Well, he's being distracted by engineers.
I can't handle this. If you're going to sit in the chair, you got to play Scream and Shout
by Will I Am.
It's not me disrespecting.
And Britney. That's a pretty good tune, though.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Okay. What song was I supposed to play?
Scream and Shout by Will I Am and Britney. And there's one version in which it'll fade off. So play the shorter version. I think one's like 1 second shorter than the other. While we're waiting for this, I just want to let people know that I will be at the Granite City Lumberjacks versus New Ulm Steel hockey game tomorrow night.
What time will that be?
At the Armadillo Sports Deck Arena in Sock Rapids or Sock Center. One of the two. I should probably figure that out.
Yeah, figure that out.
They're both in the same neighborhood.
Okay.
That'll be 7:30.
Okay.
You can buy a tarp shooter or some tarp shooter gear while you're there.
Oh, boy.
Here's the jam. You got to turn it up, Byron.
Yeah, I think you're going to do it. All eyes on us. All eyes on us.
All eyes on us. Is Britney going to be at Basilica?
No.
Would she consider it? Could she do like an acoustic version of
Britney's
Baby One More Time?
No, she would not.
No.
Vegas residency. She's making that money in Vegas.
I've seen it and I did not enjoy it.
No, I wouldn't either.
I was forced to go and it was literally the worst show I've ever seen in my life. And I'm not joking.
It's actually in one of my worst show categories.
Actually, I take that back. On my honeymoon, we were staying at an all-inclusive resort in Maya Rivera, Mexico. So every night they have like a different form of entertainment, right? Like one time they had like these two people, like at a keyboard and acoustic guitar right on the beach, and they were awesome. And they had breakdancing one night, which was interesting. Yes, we went to the breakdance show. But then they had this Michael Jackson, I guess, impersonator, I guess.
Okay.
Where this guy came up as Michael Jackson, and then he had dancers, and they were playing Michael Jackson songs. I was under the impression he was going to be singing the songs, right? But no. So it was just a Michael Jackson impersonator and dancers lip-syncing to the songs. But not only that, he was awful at lip-syncing. You've got to be kidding me. He didn't know any of the words. So, like, you know how people like Britney and Michael Jackson have the little microphone that hangs off the ear, right? Mm-hmm. So anytime he didn't know the words, he would put his hand in front of his mouth as if he was adjusting his microphone. And it's like, one, we know the microphone's not working. Two, it was literally as if the Michael Jackson impersonator, 15 minutes for the show, said, "I can't make it. I'm sick." And they just threw
this. You gotta do it.
They just threw this person because he couldn't dance. He was I would have been up there. I could have gone up there and been better than this guy. The dancers were all great, and we left like 5 songs in. So that was the worst show I've ever seen. Then Britney in Vegas was the second worst show I've ever seen. Speaking of lip syncing,
the worst show I ever saw was Vanilla Ice downtown. When he wasn't doing Vanilla Ice stuff anymore, like when he was in his hard rock era.
So this wasn't Timberwolves halftime show.
No, and then Duran Duran. I only went because it was like a free ticket, but it was like early on in my promotions career, and the gals were super excited when we got there, and by like the third song, not gonna work, I left.
Well, they only have like 2 songs,
it was
don't
awful.
They?
It was awful.
What are their main hits?
The Vanilla Ice thing, too, we watched it. He screamed for like an hour, and then we were upstairs just having a cocktail, and they wanted us to pay over $200 to stay there.
Yeah.
Bye.
Speaking of someone who has like 2 songs, he's got Ice Ice Baby and then Havana Roni.
Oh, it was awful.
Duran Duran does
they get a
Hungry
jam.
Like the Wolf, Tenavi.
Yeah, Notorious is a good song.
Awful.
Notorious.
Awful.
I don't know the other songs. The Reflex, Union of the Sing. This must be one of those things where Chris Hockey likes Duran Duran, so then he loads in all these songs because there's no way we would just have all these Duran Duran songs in the system.
I always love
it. What did you do for Valentine's Day? Yesterday. You got 2 kids, but it's probably nothing.
I had a heart-shaped pizza.
Lucky.
And gave my kids a bath and put them to bed.
Yeah, that's
sexy.
Oh,
basically what happened to us.
Yeah, that's
Are you still at the point where a husband has to get you gifts for Valentine's Day?
No. We didn't do any gifts. This is what I did. I sent a text. Are you getting the heart-shaped pizza or am I? He sends me a text back of a picture of it already sitting in the fridge. Great. Yeah. Get home, eat it.
See, he was thinking ahead of time. That's very thoughtful.
I think it's great.
Yeah, because so we also have our anniversary on February 26th. So we've always just kind of combo plattered, but it seems like since we've had children, like we've put very little effort. And I always feel bad about that because I'm like, I hate to break it to you guys. You're not the most honest gender. You don't reveal your feelings all the time. And you're difficult to read at times.
Excuse me?
Huh?
So when your wife says, don't need to do gifts, there's always something in your back of your mind's like, really? Should I not get gifts? So I ended up just getting her flowers.
Wonderful.
Just
which is what I've always said.
To say I got something, but yes. We're trying to save money, so we're not going to go all out.
Yes.
And she didn't get me anything. So she held her.
Oh, well, why don't you cry about it?
Just the quality time with her is all I really wanted. That's okay. Really what was on my list.
Okay.
I always love that one.
But so moving forward, now that we're married with young children.
Yeah.
Can we just not do Valentine's Day gifts the rest? It's pointless.
Yeah, it's pointless.
Right?
Yeah, it's fine.
But
I like that you did the flowers thing because I've always told you guys that. Like, as much as people say, I don't like flowers, I don't want to get flowers.
Well, they're
flowers
dumb. They're going to be dead in a week.
Yep. But it's always just the gesture. So when in doubt, it's always going to work. So I like that you did that.
And then I just got cards from the children.
I love it.
And they colored on it.
I love it.
I felt like that wasn't enough either.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. So I'm not in the doghouse.
No, you're not. It's totally fine.
Because
when you're newly dating, when you're newly married, put in the effort on both sides, by the way, not just the men. The women should be doing it too.
Yes.
Either side of your both. Everybody make the effort. It's not just one person's job. But then as later on in life, it's like, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so, hand pound. Well, see you later.
But well, you get to a point when your kids are old enough, we're like, all right, we need to start
bringing it back,
doing the romantic things back. There's like when they leave the house, when all your kids are out of the house and you're 70 years old, can you still just skirt by with we're not doing anything for Valentine's Day?
No, I would say if you're empty nesters, I actually thought about this yesterday. Like when our kids get to an age where you're able to leave them home, then go out to dinner.
Yeah,
we're just not at a place where we can do that.
No,
we get in the babysitter meat grinder. When you're out of that, then I think you need to bring the dinners back in.
Okay.
Because you need some time to go talk to one another for an hour without somebody pulling on you.
That's when you get two pizza-shaped pizzas.
Yeah.
Not pizza-shaped, heart-shaped pizzas.
Well, and he got the cookie dough as well.
Oh.
Now, if that's not love, I don't know what is.
All these pizza places, and we just had Carboni's earlier, and it was delicious. But one, they draw you in with a pizza,
mm-hmm.
and then they always do the... Do you want to get dessert here for $4? And it's hard to turn that down every time.
You can't do it. If you don't take it, you're losing money.
It's like cinnamon sticks or cookie dough or every single time.
Yep.
I had a psycho dad moment last night.
What do you mean?
Well, I did want to bring up one thing with the Valentine's Day gifts first, though. The worst part now is having that mentality that you and I have, and I'm glad you just validated that for me so I don't feel bad about it. Because now we're in the social media era where everyone has to post on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, look what my husband or boyfriend did for me. Mm-hmm. Look what, and then you feel less of a man.
Hashtag love. Hashtag be mine.
Okay.
Hashtag vomit.
So I appreciate you validating.
Yes.
Okay. Psycho dad performance last night.
Okay.
Because speaking of social media, when it comes to parenting, right?
Yeah.
Everyone only posts like the positive stuff about their children. Like, oh, we're out here picking apples. This
we're
is
making
the greatest,
snow angels.
Greatest ever. My kids are just the best. Hashtag blessed. And we are. We're hashtag blessed.
Okay.
And there's so many good moments with the children.
Yep.
And I love them dearly. But there's also some negative moments.
You are correct.
And the problem is, I think, I would like to know, and maybe we don't have enough time for answers on this, is it harder to be a parent in 2019 or 1989? Okay. And I think there are many ways in which it's easier now.
Mm-hmm.
Technology makes it easier.
Yep.
Right? When we're at a place where we need our kids to just be quiet for a half hour, iPhone.
Yep.
Take it. You can't overdo it, but here's like Leo goes to Taekwondo class and we can't have Samson running out on the floor.
Right.
So here's the phone for a half hour.
Yep.
Be cool. So from that standpoint, I think it's easier. But I also think expectations of us are different than they were 34 years ago. I think there's a lot more pressure, a lot more stress, and I think social media has something to do with it, where we always have to have the image of the perfect family being thrown out. So I bring this up to admit that we need to recognize as parents that we're human and we make mistakes.
Yes.
And I made a big mistake last night. I had a meltdown.
Okay.
So I'm going to be honest about it.
Okay.
Wife's gone.
Mm-hmm.
I got kids. It's time for bath time before we go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably experienced this. When it comes to bath time, like at one point it was like really easy to get them to go up for bath time, but now they try to draw it out because they just want to keep playing.
Right.
They want to keep playing with their toys and their games and their puzzles. So you try to come up with different ways to get them motivated to want to go to the bath time. So what we've been doing the last couple of weeks is we're going to have a race up the stairs.
Okay.
Daddy versus Leo and Samson, who can win? Leo wins every time because I'm not going to beat him. And Samson's just, he's 2 years old. Yep. He's not going to beat Leo up the stairs.
Yep.
Last night, I decided to do the old, I'm going to get out to the early start. I'm going to fall down right in front of Leo and act like I can't move. Samson skirts right by the side. Samson wins the race for the first time. Leo's not happy about it.
Meltdown ensues.
He hasn't learned how to become a good loser yet.
Okay.
And be gracious in losing. So we get in the bathroom, and I'm turning my back to turn on the faucet in the bathtub. All of a sudden, Samson, who was standing on a step stool, I just see Leo chucking him off the step stool, landing on the hard floor, right next to the toilet. Luckily, Samson's very tough and handled it well. But this is also a day removed from Leo pushing Samson into the wall because Samson won at the game. What's the name of it? Zingo. Okay. We played Zingo and Samson beat him, which is it's a game that's all luck. There's no strategy involved.
Yeah.
But he lost that game, pushed him into the wall, let him know I wasn't too happy with that. And then last night it kind of broke me. So I just, I grab him, put him into the bedroom. Yep. I kind of got in his face and yelled at him a little bit.
Yep.
Get to the door. I slam the door.
Yep.
Right. And I've probably slammed the door 3 times in the history of his existence so far, and I'm not proud of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not happy with my behavior. Well, come to find out, door's locked after I slammed it.
No.
So I'm like, and we just moved in September, so I'm unfamiliar. I'm not observant enough to know.
You don't have the corks worked out.
Whether I don't know the lock system on this doorknob.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, great. Door's locked. I know. And he's melting down. He's an anxious child to begin with. So he's crying. He's scared. He can't get out of his room. Yep. He thinks daddy locked him in. And I'm trying to explain to him while he's being hysterical. All right, you just got to take the little switch.
And turn it.
And turn it.
Yep.
And nothing's happening. He's still melting down. We have a guest room that is just empty right now that has a similar doorknob. So I look over at him like, all right, I'm just going to go look at the doorknob to see. I realize there is no lock on it. So the door is now locked, but he didn't do it manually. It was for me slamming the door. So my slamming of the door somehow locked this door into place. Uh-huh. And now I don't have my wife around. Samson's in the bathroom. I'm in absolute freak panic mode. And I eventually just had to say, Leo, back up.
You did not do that.
I had to ram into the door.
Are you kidding?
Yes. The doorknob was locked.
No. There's a little hole.
Hole on it. There isn't a hole. Because there's no lock to begin with. So why would they have a hole on it?
No.
But I broke through. The little plate that's on the side is now not there anymore.
Okay.
Because I had to break through that. But I just wanted to bring that up because I think quite often in 2019 as parents, we feel like we need to be perfect at all times. We project the image of perfection. So all we see from other parents is their perfect moments.
Yep.
And I was not proud of my performance last
night. Here's what I will tell you.
Hold on. I need to find the soundbite. That's the whole point of playing this. And you won't even get it. You probably didn't watch Married to Children.
And now, back to Psycho Dad.
I was a psycho dad last night.
Okay, here's what I will tell you.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you might be feeling kind of bad about it.
Yeah.
Everybody has been where you are. I have, outside of kicking Big O's door in, but all of the things that you described, I have all done.
Sure.
Now, what it gets called in the mom circles is angry mom.
See, you guys, I think, get shamed even more.
It's, yes.
As moms.
Because it was the week where they weren't having school. By day 3.
Oh, yeah.
We were all texting each other. We're having happy hour on Friday. Like, we got to get out of the house. The kids got to get out of the house. And one of my friends was like, I've turned into angry mom.
They need exercise.
And everybody else was like, yep, I'm angry mom. And you do these things and you lash out and then immediately you feel bad after.
Can you start doing some tweets with hashtag angry mom?
Hashtag angry mom?
Yeah.
Yes. But the social media thing, I don't know that that's like a factor, but I also think it's the talk of like I told you.
Yes.
I didn't know I was supposed to be going on these school tours for Big O, because when you and I went to kindergarten, we just went to kindergarten at the school. Like, that's the school you went to kindergarten.
Sure.
And then I started feeling
like... You're supposed to go on a tour of school?
Yes.
What?
Yes. And not just one school. They were going on... People were going on multiple tours of schools. And now
like
I
private
felt...
schools and stuff?
No,
what?
Just to go see...
Well, don't you just have one public school where you're in that geography and that's where you go?
Yeah.
But this other than the private school.
Other than to see, like, well, we could open and enroll here. Or maybe we want to go here. I wasn't planning on going on any school tours. The school is four blocks away.
That's our geography.
That's where Big O is going. Yeah. But now I went on a school tour because all the other moms
they
were like,
shamed you into
have
it.
You haven't got on your school tour yet? No.
So let me write this down. I got to go on a
school tour. You got to go on a school tour. Yes.
It's got one more year before kindergarten.
And then I went and I didn't really like it. So now I'm like, do I need to be seeing other schools? I should have never done it.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that's a bad idea because then if you do like the other school more than the one you were going to go to.
Then you start getting in the enrollment. Like, I don't want to do that. He's going to go to this school. He's going to be fine. But I got mom shamed.
See, but that's 2019. Our child has to go to the absolute best school out there.
Absolutely. And it's not like I don't want him to. Yes, you want them to
go. Sure, we want a good education.
Absolutely. But my God. See, I'm exhausted.
See, and I think dads, we don't really talk to each other a whole lot about other dad stuff other than just complaining.
But it's also on the opposite end.
So I don't think we get shamed from other dads.
No, I don't think you get dad shamed. But on the opposite, it's also how I've learned a ton, too. Because you start talking, it's like, oh, they had that?
There's a lot of education.
You just do this. You put this on it. Or, well, haven't you heard about this group? And so it's also good for that. But it's just a roller coaster of emotions.
Psycho dad. Psycho dad. Psycho Dad.
Thanks, Old B.
Thanks, guys.
Another Psycho Dad is coming up. That would be Mark Rosen. He's here on Fridays, 2 to 3 o'clock. We have a lot to talk with him about, including the big Minnesota Wild news yesterday.
Fan.
Final hour of the Common program without the Common Dan Cole today. Tenna B, Ryan Donaldson in for Common, and of course Mark Rosen now joins us on Fridays at 2 o'clock. Are you regretting this yet?
I almost did it again today, and I honestly think I'm not making this up. I don't know how you are remembering dreams when you wake up in the morning.
I don't remember any of them.
I normally don't unless I'm on vacation taking a Rosen, and then if you're well rested, I normally would remember them. But I swear to God, I had a dream last night that I was running late to call you, knowing you were doing the program, and I had a
knowing how desperately I need you.
Well, I found a place where I could call, and I did that. But it almost did happen again. I have to almost like write down, don't forget to go in at 2 o'clock. But it's fine, especially since Common's not here. So I got a break today. I hope in theory. Although I did hear from him earlier today.
You did.
Shocking.
Even on his days off, he tries to get you going.
It's
doesn't
just,
he?
Well, no, it's just. Well, yeah, he's kind of passive-aggressive. He goes, just grabbed a Starbucks at a grocery store after running an errand, getting a haircut, and buying a new pair of tennis shoes. Is this what retirement is like? So I wrote it back. This is a guy who literally has the entire morning free and every day free after 3 o'clock and everything. He's asking me, and I went, I would know. I'm too busy doing the power trip and hanging out with you at 2 o'clock, but yes, the rest of it is...
He's been retired for 20 years.
He
golfs every day.
In other words,
when it's warm out,
getting a Starbucks, running an errand, and getting a haircut, and buying a new pair of tennis shoes would be impossible for him to do before he gets into
no time.
Yeah, because between the hours of 8 a.m. and noon, I'm so busy doing what in the wintertime? Not hitting golf balls.
Well, and not only is he on noon to three, but he doesn't even spend time prepping for that.
Well,
there's. The rest of us have to take,
from
8 a.m. to noon, we're working hard. What should we talk about? What are the topics out there?
I know. I could just see that blank eating grin on his face when he was texting to me. But that's
my favorite thing with Common is he'll bring up a sports topic or a story that I wasn't aware of. Mm-hmm. And then he, shames me into, you're the producer of the show and you didn't even know about that? It's like, well, you didn't either. You never do.
Well, we're telling inside secrets only because we love him, and that's why we can do this behind his back, because we say it to his face.
Before we get into all the sports topics, I see you with two boxes of Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah.
And you have my favorite kind. That would be the Thin Mints.
Oh, there's no other.
I would like to know your Girl Scout cookie power rankings. Clearly, Thin Mints are number one because you got two boxes of them.
Absolutely. Always has been. And thanks to Paul Fletcher's daughter, who apparently was quite entrepreneurial in her pursuit here at iHeart Radio, the top seller.
By the way, and, tough decision to go to this place to find people to buy cookies.
But I think she kind of had a game plan. I think she had a flow chart of how she was going to pull this off. I don't even know how old the young girl is, but and these, of course, need to go right immediately into the freezer.
Yes, those are good frozen.
Yeah, I would say this one with a bullet, and I like the cream ones. I'm a peanut butter freak, so I...
Like the tag-alongs, is that what they're called?
Yeah, I don't even know what they're called
anymore. Or do you like the dosey dose ones?
Anything that has peanut butter in it, I'm in.
They're all good.
They are all good.
I'm looking at them right now. The Thanks a Lot are really good.
No, I didn't even know where we are in the cycle of selling Girl Scout cookies.
I was going to say, because I have not purchased them yet. Is Fletcher still selling them? Is anyone else selling Girl Scout cookies right now? Because I will buy them.
I have not seen...
I'll buy like five boxes.
No, when I was at the number four, a couple of photographers had daughters in that age group, and they put the sign up, and you sign up the sheet, and... It's pretty easy to consummate the transaction. But I saw Paul. I went, put me down for two. I'm in. So I gave him the money, and going home with these, we're going to hide them. Try to hide them in the freezer.
Well, if they're still selling them,
and,
I don't foresee
that. Yeah, and the problem is, not just a question of eating one. Try to eat not the whole box in one sitting. That's the difficult part. It's just, they're so good.
I am one of those, because they come in rows. I am one of those that when I start a row, I have to finish the row. I do that with like Ritz crackers.
Terrible.
Which is really great for me.
Well, we did a story. I think I was actually my former employer, Channel 4. Speaking of cookies, I think they did a story I was watching the other night on Sweet Martha and what she does during the other 50 weeks out of the year. You know, and she said she's already in.
She counts her money, is what she does.
I would say
she's buying tennis shoes with Common today. That's
probably
she's
more
doing.
Expensive tennis shoes, but. The prep work has already begun. I think she's expanded in other states. I sound like a typical viewer. I was only paying half attention to the story, but the fact that she's living this so-called normal life, and she pops up every end of August and just sells 2 zillion cookies.
Can you be honest with me if I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you still watch the Channel 4 News?
Yeah, I do.
Every night?
Not every night, no.
And then how does it feel when you're watching it? Does it feel weird?
No, because I mean honestly, two things. Often I'm watching another show that my wife has DVR'd, so we're watching it together at that time, and it's not appointment television. I probably watch the news more than most people who work at the news station. I mean, I'm kind of a news junkie, so I watch a lot of the news. I don't watch every night. I watch some of it, but no, it doesn't feel weird at all because I feel like I'm watching it like I did when I had days off. I haven't missed it for a second. I missed, like I said the other night at the Vikings thing, I said I miss the locker room. I don't miss the game. I mean, I miss the relationships. I miss, people that I work with down there, and Amelia in particular, and Jed, our assignment editor at night, and it's pretty quiet at night down there. We don't have many people down there at night, so it's pretty quiet.
When you're watching, can you spot the mistakes?
Oh, yeah.
Can you be like, Schaefer really screwed up that weather forecast?
Yeah, I'm always critiquing in my own mind. Like, that was redundant, the way they wrote that.
Sure.
That one of the anchors should have caught that. I don't do it very often, but yeah, I watch. I like to say,
because the rest of us watching can't really ever figure out a mistake unless it's a major one, right?
Exactly. I can usually tell what's going on if there's a delay or whatever. I'm just not that engaged in it anymore. I just have other things I'm doing and want to do. And I, I watch my share of sports, but I'm not locked in. I mean, there are certain nights. I mean, we went out for dinner the other night, and I think it was the night the Gophers lost that heartbreaker. The bad call, and who else was playing that night? The Wolves were playing. They had that impressive win over Houston.
Yes,
it was one of those nights where I went, I'm going to watch some sports tonight. I do that once, twice every week. I want to keep up. I'm keeping up with it, obviously.
What's it like watching sports on your couch? How does that feel?
The best ever. Walk away.
Instead of in like your cube or your,
I don't have to take
your edibay.
I'm not taking notes.
Yeah.
I'm taking mental notes because, we have discussion about what happened in the game and with Common, and they have to, because he gets up the next morning, reads the newspaper,
and then texts you.
Looks at it, and then texts me and go, "Told you, da 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 da." I'm going, "You didn't even see the game." What, you don't even know what's going. What are you talking about? Now, I don't see every. I'm not going to pretend like I watch every game. And what's going on tonight? By the way, oh, the Wild. Well, my wife's birthday is tonight, so
Wild Devils.
But yeah, I mean, I'll probably catch the end of it. Maybe.
First game after the Wild, after finding out Craig Leopold's ready to sell everything off. We'll see how they react.
I want to quiz you because I did not unfortunately hear your discussion with Mr. Russo. I know he was in here for. A while.
I could have gone like 5 hours with him.
I'm sure, especially. This is an interesting time for this franchise. I mean, it's a business call here when you're at this sort of, and I'm looking at the standings. I'm going, you know, the Blackhawks. I'm glad Kama's not here today because I already texted him because the Blackhawks beat New Jersey last night, right? So New Jersey's got this.
Yeah,
back.
Chicago's 2 points back now.
I know. Here they come.
The Blackhawks.
8th win in 9 games.
I think St. Louis won again, so they're well ahead of us now.
Yeah.
Vancouver's now tied with us with points. I think we got a couple games in hand.
But, you know, the Wild, again, this is the old, okay, well, they get to play New Jersey. New Jersey's not very good. Now, you're not going to argue with me about that one.
Well, the only team the Wild have beaten since the All-Star break is New Jersey.
Right, that's not good.
They won, and I think New Jersey gave up like 8 goals to St. Louis the other night.
Right.
They're awful. That's why it's interesting tonight, right? Because you have the dynamic of you're at home playing a terrible team that's not playing well going into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the dynamic of your big story drops yesterday where your owner has pretty much told the general manager, if you get the right deal, you can sell off a piece or two, even if that means we're not going to make the playoffs, right? Which is your owner saying, I don't believe in this team. You got a head coach that might think, I'm going to be out next, right? Because if we don't go to the playoffs, and this is last year my contract, and they already got the guy in waiting behind me, that this is it for me. So it's kind of a, if the players don't want to go anywhere, this is kind of your last stand. Like, we got to show the GM right now before the deadline, because we have, 5 games left before the trade deadline. We got to show them right now. We're playing a team we should beat at home. This will say a lot, I think, tonight about what kind of character this team has.
Well, I thought all week was going to say a lot. And they blew the 2-goal lead against Philadelphia the other night. And I thought that was the start of what, you know, again, would be slippery slope and where are they going. And that's what we have here is a failure to communicate. Are Boudreaux and Fenton on the same page when it comes to this team right now? Boudreaux obviously wants to win and wants to win now. He doesn't give a rip about the future. Boudreaux might be Paul Molitor behind the bench right now.
I mean, sure.
The equivalent of looking at Fenton came in here. He had time to kind of do his own thing, but now he's looking elsewhere. Molitor, manager of the year before, but you always knew in the back of their minds of that Falvey and Levine probably wanted to go in a different direction, and they did with Rocco Baldelli. And so I think that's where we're heading with Boudreaux. It certainly seems that way, and it could happen sooner than later. It may happen at the end of the year. No one knows, but it certainly doesn't look like much is moving in a positive direction with this hockey team right now.
So then the question is which players do you sell off?
Wow.
I think when people saw the story yesterday, they probably thought, all right, fire sale time. And I'm not sure that's the exact route going on there. But I think now you just go, all right, if we trade Eric Staal, can we get a good deal in return?
Right.
Is it better long-term for our future? But it doesn't necessarily mean, even if you sell a piece, that doesn't mean, especially in a Western Conference that's really bad, that you're giving up on the season either.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't necessarily mean that.
But it's just what's in the best interest long term.
What were Russo's thoughts? Because they have your Staal, you have, like, you know, Zucker's.
Well, he threw out Coyle's name as kind of the
Coyle's
most,
name's always
most likely
been
to be traded,
there.
And I think it's mostly because it's probably most desirable for another team. He's making a small amount, you know, $3.2 million. He's versatile in terms of
center, right.
He can play center or right wing, which it fits more teams' needs. He's been playing relatively well the last month and change. So you kind of threw out Coyle's names first. Obviously, Staal has a 10-team modified no-trade clause, and we found out the other day that really the 10 teams he put on there are some of the 10 best teams in the league, and he did that intentionally because he wants to stay here and he doesn't want to move, and then that way he can kind of determine where he wants to go if he wants to waive the no-trade clause. So I thought that was interesting. But I would think Coyle and Staal are probably the two most likely. I even think, and I know our radio station would miss him if he left, but Jason Zucker...
Yeah.
Given that he has underperformed a bit this year to his contract, and he,
absolutely,
by the time July 1st comes around, now you have limitations as to how you can trade him, and he still does have some value just because he scored 30 plus goals last year.
Yeah, and the deadline is when, next week?
I believe it's next week. I think we're like 10 days away, 20, 25th, 26th, something like that.
Yeah, Yeah, go ahead. I guess it's not just about, you know, making the playoffs, which is, you know, the Wild find themselves in that meat grinder again. But, you know, they're not going to – you would think that after how many years – I'm reading about the Blackhawks last night, reading Patrick Kane's only 30 years old. I think like he's been 12th year already in the NHL, and it seems like he's been tormenting the Wild for about that many years.
He has been, yeah.
Yeah, and you see the Blackhawks with their, what, three cups have they won? I
think that's correct, yeah.
During this time, and – you know, it's one thing if the Wild had ascended to at least, you know, got to the Western Conference Finals. You know, they've had this consistency of being, you don't have to look at the standings. You know you're going to make the playoffs. You know, you see where Winnipeg and Nashville are, and the Blues have come out. I don't know, Calgary, San Jose. My son got a chance to go to the game out there last night in San Jose to watch Ovi beat up on him pretty badly.
Nice.
But, yeah, he was happy with his gal. They
want to go to the Shark Tank one.
They said it was pretty cool.
Yeah. It always seems like a good atmosphere when I'm watching on television.
They were wound up, except it didn't last very long because Washington beat them 5-1. But I said, at least you get to see Washington. You get to see, you know, the Stanley Cup champs, and you get to see one of the best teams in hockey. So, but yeah, it's just like we're having this discussion again. And I know a lot of teams in the West are in the same bit, but the Wild rarely, if ever, have gotten above that fray. You know, say, well, they've had home ice. They had it against with the Blues, right? A couple of years ago.
Well, yeah, they were the second best team in the West.
Crazy.
What, just 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And they were actually first until they had a meltdown the last month of the year.
That's right.
And that was the year they made the Martin Hanzel trade, yeah. Which clearly did not turn out well. But I even said at the time, the Western Conference was down that year, which was rare up until that point.
Right.
You had the best team we'd seen here. You were first in the Western Conference at the time. If there was ever a time to swing for the fences and make a deal, that was the time to do it. Clearly it backfired, but I still don't have a problem with them at least attempting the deal.
To try something, yeah.
Neil in St. Paul, stay on hold. We'll take your call next. If anyone else wants to join, phone lines are open, 651-989-5326 or 1-800-320-5326. I want to talk about youth movement and coaching, Vikings kicking situation, more Wild talk, and the Gopher women's basketball team throughout the next two segments with Mark Rosen. But first, we want to put a grand in your hand. Ryan, what's the keyword this hour for the National Cash Contest?
This hour, your keyword is pizza. So text the keyword pizza and listen for the keyword all day long here on The Fan. Every hour we'll give you a new keyword. Text the keyword pizza to 200-200 to put a grand in your hand. Starter text messaging and data rates apply.
It's the interim producer filling in as the interim host. You're listening to Brandon Molesky on The Fan.
Join fellow animal lovers and their dogs at the Animal Humane Society's Whisker War Gala tomorrow at the Minneapolis Convention Center. You can enjoy cocktails, a seated dinner, fundraising activities, and much, much more. Learn about this very special evening at animalhumanesociety.org/whiskerwhirl.
All right, 10 to be back with Mark Rosen. I did find out, at least from one emailer, that they're still selling Girl Scout cookies through February 24th, or March 24th.
Thank goodness.
So I got lots.
You got plenty
of
time.
You can order more boxes.
I'm done.
All right, let's take some phone calls. Let's go to Neil in St. Paul. Hi, Neil. You're on with Mark Rosen.
A couple things about the NHL. You guys brought up the Blackhawks. You know, it's such a formula they got to put together to win the Stanley Cup. First of all, the Blackhawks had Taves and Kane and probably two of the best defensemen in the world. And yes. We have neither one of those 4 points. And they have a goalie that stood on his head. I mean, we don't have a Kane. We don't have a Taves. And, you know, the Wild were close a couple times, got outclassed by Chicago, got beat up by St. Louis, got beat up by Winnipeg. And if you remember when Chicago won one of the Cups, they had Dustin Byfuglien on their team. You know, you've got to have that formula of good guys, good defense, a couple of tough guys. But it's so hard in the NHL. You got four or five teams that even have a chance, to be honest, to win the Stanley Cup. The rest of them, it's just entertainment, you know. And another thing, I think the Wild, my comments about the Wild, guys on a trading block, Zucker, I thought he was underrated all the time. He's a great player. Coyle, you know, Spurgeon, he might be up there. I mean, he's a great player.
God, no.
Granlund, possibly, but other than that, I don't know.
Not with Dumba out, you can't trade Spurgeon.
Well, even if he's here, Jared Spurgeon is so darn good. He is maybe the most underrated athlete in all of sports. He's unbelievably good.
Yeah, you're pretty high on him. I understand that.
And he's actually shown his value even more with Dumba out. He's picked up the offensive side.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they sure they'll miss him though, don't they? But yeah, it brings up a good point. I mean, the Blackhawks, you have that chemistry, you have that the one or two superstars on your team and a hot goalie, tough defenseman. The Wild seemingly got bullied the last couple of years. They tried to improve that aspect of their game with some of these role players they brought in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we won't know. I mean, maybe we'll never find out how that perform in the postseason. They got to get there first, but it certainly doesn't look promising at the moment.
Ben from Duluth is going to bring up a topic I was about to bring up with you, so I'll actually get to it first before we talk to Ben in Duluth. But I did see a little note today about the Vikings and the kicking situation. We always have some sort of kicking drama when it comes to the Vikings.
Because
Dan Bailey is a free agent.
Right.
So he's not technically definitely going to return.
Sure.
I would be okay if he returns. I'm okay with him. I'm not in love with him. But there's also other good kicking options that are going to be available as free agents. You got Matt Bryant, who was just recently released from Atlanta.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise.
He's always been a solid kicker and is used to kicking indoors. Steven Gostkowski from the Patriots.
Wow.
Which that's just probably a situation where he wants to get paid and Belichick doesn't pay guys like
we'll
that.
We'll move on from here.
They'll find some other kicker that'll
in the weeds
produce for a lot less money. And then Robbie Gould kind of reemerged in San Francisco. And I get the point I was going to bring up with this, and maybe Ben and Duluth is as well. I wonder how much of the kicking issues can you point on coaching here? And it's really a hard thing to
quantify,
right? Because the coach can't go out there and kick the ball for. But you saw kickers here that had moments of success, or at least you thought they were going to be successful and then fall off, right? Mm-hmm. Blair Walsh had a very good first year here.
Sure.
Fell off the table. I still have issues with the way Zimmer handled Daniel Carlson.
Oh, I totally agree.
In preseason last year.
I've been really open about
where
that.
Where he missed one kick and
we're going to go for two.
We got to go for two in a preseason game and the coach is calling him at halftime. I'm like,
I totally agree.
So I just wonder if psychologically, mentally, that our coaches and now our special teams coach is gone. So I don't know if he was an issue with it or not. If they have some sort of influence on why our kicking game has not been very good here.
And more importantly, how do you decide when there's such a rare breed, trying to get in the mind of a kicker?
Yeah.
How do you decide who to go with? You mentioned some pretty big names out there with really good resumes. You think of the Adam Vinatieri's of the world, and then you think of Janikowski and what he's done, and think, well, what these guys keep finding employment, finding ways of winning games. How do you decide between a Bryant and a Bailey or a Robbie Gould, Gould, whatever his name is? You know, it's hard. Who's got the final say in that? I mean, does Mike Zimmer really know kickers? I think you just brought up a really good point. I mean, he psychologically, what happened with Daniel Carlson, and we all remember the Packer game. You drafted him fifth. You had to look at his body of work and why you looked at him and said he's worth a fifth round draft pick, which is nothing to sneeze at. And he said we're gonna go with this guy, roll with him, and it's not how many games done.
Gave up on him pretty quickly.
Yeah, and we'll see how things work out with under pressure. He didn't really have any in Oakland this year.
Sure.
But he's got a hell of a leg, and he can probably boom it from 60, 65 yards, and maybe now that he's got a year under his belt, mentally he'll get stronger. I always think that in that case, and I don't know, I really haven't talked to the Vikings about this. I know the Twins with Abram, and they have a sports psychologist with so much money being poured into professional sports in particular, with all the bells and whistles they have at TCO, for instance, how much, and this is a rhetorical question, how much time do they spend on the psychological aspects of it?
Mm-hmm.
With especially kickers, do you have someone to kind of, they probably have their own routine, but a young guy like Daniel Carlson, you think, well, especially after the preseason game, even forgetting what happened with the Packer game, where they work with him, the mental side of it as much as the physical side, which he has. We know he can kick the ball.
The mental side is more important.
Well, absolutely it is. And that's something that I don't think a lot of old school coaches have time in their day to think about or want to think about it or don't care about it. It's like,
and probably, frankly, don't know how to coach it, right? When I used to coach hockey, I can't coach goalie.
Right.
I can't tell. I mean, I could tell you where I could probably score on you, but I can't tell you how you need to change your technique.
Sure.
And I'm guessing most coaches are probably the same way with kickers,
And we know how damn important they are. We saw that, not just with the Vikings, but we saw a lot of teams miss lots of extra points and what look like easier field goals, but it's a fascinating way of looking at it. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, no matter who the Vikings end up with, until you put that person out there in a clutch situation. It doesn't matter who you sign.
Let's go to Ben in Duluth. Hi, Ben. You're on with Mark Rosen.
Hey, guys. So I wanted to bring up the fact that I think it's been a big thing with kickers forever, it seems like, is one of the things is if you don't succeed right away, an NFL team can go pick up a guy that's older that has that experience so easily because these kickers can play till, you know, late 30s, early 40s, that there's a lot of those guys out there. Dan Bailey was just, you know, sitting there waiting,
right,
and he came back. That's an issue. It's not like quarterbacks, halfbacks, it's like, oh, your guy's not performing. Oh, well, there's nobody out there that we can, you know, play to start. Not the same with kickers. So some of these guys struggle at first and are just thrown to the side. And I think we actually have an important thing happening. If you look at NFL Europe, they had a couple of guys, Akers and Vinatieri, and now we've got the AAF, which seems to be on the same scale, almost the same, you know, play style, the same level of players. So I'm wondering if AAF can affect kickers. These guys actually get some chance to kick some real field goals, even though they're not doing the point after.
I was thinking about I was thinking about the other day about that. The AAF is perfect for kickers.
Right, it is.
Because then, you know, if you're 9 for 10 and they actually have some tape to watch you on, as opposed to with real live game pressure situations.
Otherwise, there's not a minor league, really, that you can...
And you're bringing a guy for a workout. And it's just a different... It's different than a game.
But you look at... I remember hearing about Carlson. He never missed one in practice. You know, he's kicking them from 65 yards consistently. But as the late, great Arnie Palmer once said, you know, man, I hit all my drives straight on the driving range, but something happens from that walk from the driving range to the first tee that we all can relate to.
That's my issue.
Well, and we get it, because how many times you sat on a driving range, and we're just hacks.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm hitting them good today.
Yeah.
I got that
feel really good.
Got that driver working for you, and the first one ends up in the...
I can't tell you how many times I've left the driving range and see common later, and they're like, I figured it out.
I finally
figured out what I was doing wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like that with kickers. I mean, you wonder. And, you know, a lot of them succeed at a high level. Others take them a little longer.
All right, let's talk youth movement and coaching, Twins.
Sure.
Maybe some Gopher women's basketball, all with Mark Rosen. Final segment next.
It's the Green Giants, Brandon Molesky, filling in for Common on The Fan.
Final segment before Barrero and JG take over. Time to be in for Common. Mark Rosen here. Ryan Donaldson with as well. Story in the Star Tribune today, Rosie.
Yes, sir.
Actually, I wanted to get this email first. Sorry, that's very Common man, like to kind of change directions in the
middle.
No. We should do the email first because it's from Larry Mondello guy, who the subject line is, "Let's rip Common."
I like it. Refreshing take.
He wrote, "This is great. Common rip fest. Let's spend the whole hour ripping him." By the way, it's not true that Common doesn't do any prep work. Once or twice a week, he texts or calls me about a bit he wants me to write. It's a solid 5 to 10 minutes a week of prep work for him.
I always love that one.
By the way,
brilliant.
For those of you who are asking, a couple of them on Twitter, he's up at Hinkley tonight, right?
Yes.
Doing the
some boxing
stuff up there. Yeah, so that's where Common is, and he was running his errands all day.
It's a Roberto Bravo Brant or Robert Bravo Brant or something like that.
Local guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, Larry Mondello guy. Yes.
Star Tribune had a story today about basically the youth movement with head coaches.
Hmm?
Basically, all the coaches in town are now younger than me, which is really depressing for me.
Think about that.
But, you know, clearly we still have some older ones in Bruce Boudreau, who's 64 years old, and Mike Zimmer, who's 62. The United, Adrian Heath is 58. Bob Motzko, now head coach of the Gopher hockey team, from the men's side, 57. Cheryl Reeve is 52. Brad Frost is still relatively young, especially since it seems like he's been there forever. But he's only 45 years old.
Right.
And what's he been there, for a decade? I mean, it seems
like it, yeah.
So he was young when hired.
Mm-hmm.
PJ Fleck is 38. Rocco Baldelli is 37. Lindsey Whalen is 36. Richard Pitino is 36. And Ryan Saunders, as of right now, the interim head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, which I think as long as they don't fall off the face of the planet, he's going to be the head coach next year. He's 32 years old.
Younger than my son.
So tell me what's happened, what's been the change in mentality in the sports world that we're now opting and not afraid of the coaches under 40 years old?
Well, I think it's just, I think it's reflective, and in some respects, of what's gone on in the real world as well. I think that these coaches are well-versed or well-educated in not just the X's and O's of their particular sport, but I think in understanding as former players, as really almost CEOs, that they have an opportunity, that they know how to run a team. When they sit down, when it's PJ or you have Rocco Baldelli, for instance, sits down with Jim Polad, I mean, there are plenty of reasons why they hired him, which have really nothing to do with just how he's going to handle a hit-and-run situation. And the analytics of the game are taken over. We all know that. But I think it's managing millennials as much as anything else. And it's not as if older coaches can't do that. I think we see, I thought it was Joe Maddon of the Cubs. I think he's really successful. In his, I think there's an interesting quote in the paper about that, that he's Millennials for Dummies or something. He's reading Managing Millennials for Dummies, celebrating his 65th birthday last week. Bill Belichick, I mean, this just in, he won another Super Bowl. People don't look at him as, you know, he's past his prime. And look at the defensive coordinators. Some of the guys have been around forever. Wade Phillips. These guys, you know, they're definitely in their 60s and older.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think with for every Sean McVay and an opportunity that exists now for young players, I think it's not they're just doing it because they happen to be early 30s. They're doing it because they're well-qualified to do it. Yeah, it doesn't always work out, but I think it's a combination of knowing how to manage, how to handle players who are on social media, how to handle a locker room. I mean, you can only do so much to push the right buttons to get the most out of them. But I think when things go south and you're trying to correct it, you know, I don't have time. I don't understand. We just talked about Mike Zimmer and the kicking situation. Yeah. It's a rhetorical question, but would Sean McVay handle that differently with a Daniel Carlson?
Sure.
What, you know, you hear Zimmer and he can be kind of crusty. We all know that after games during the week. Boudreaux can be that way, but he can also be very disarming and charming. We saw, you know, what's gone on with the Timberwolves organization, with Tibbs. I think screaming at his players all the time. How much criticism? And I think the other issue, like with Tibbs, I think had to do with he wasn't resonating with corporate Timberwolves as well. So you can't just look at it.
The fan base never caught on to him.
No, and I think him standing up for every game, it just, you know, it's not just wins and losses. I mean, it's a perception. Like, I don't want to go watch a guy screaming at his players the whole time, standing up. It just doesn't feel like he's having fun. You know, and Saunders is certainly, I mean, he's wired. I mean, I think Ryan is wired in a way right now where he wants to kind of do his own thing. I mean, we all know his lineage. We all know about his father. We all know what an iconic figure Flip was in the state. And it's a difficult shoes for Ryan to walk into because it's the Saunders name is always going to be there, yet he has to try to establish his own identity, his own thing with this team. But I think, generally speaking, I think it's players who are young men or young women, like in the case of Lindsay. I mean, I don't think anyone went, oh, Lindsay Whalen's not, she's only 36. I don't know. She's not going to be able to have, wait, what? They got Lindsay Whalen to coach the Gophers? You know, from a recruiting standpoint in college, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, you got, you know, the PJ Flex of the world. I mean, again, he may not be for everyone. For your age group is even might be.
Sure.
But for 18, 19
year old. You call me old, Mark?
I'm calling you old. Mature. But when you walk into an 18, 19 year old living room and you can try to sell what you're selling, it's right now it seems to be working. It matters. So I think it's a combination of things.
I find the I'll be honest, I'm not watching a whole lot of Timberwolves games. So a lot of what I'm gauging the reaction off of is what I see on Twitter, and that might be the wrong idea. That's probably might be the bad place to do it. But I see people constantly back and forth having debates and arguments about the Timberwolves squad and how to fix it and blah 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 blah. I feel with Ryan Saunders that the bar has been set lower for our expectations of him, right? When Tibbs comes over And he's also a partial GM, I guess you could call him.
Oh, he was.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he has an expectation. You know, he's bringing Jimmy Butler in. Your expectations were, with Tibbs were, this needs to be a playoff team and has a chance to move farther in the playoffs. Ryan, I think, because he's Flip's son and everyone loved Flip, and because he's 32 years old and doesn't really have doesn't have past experience of head coaching, I feel like our expectations have been lowered with him, and it's easier for him to meet that standard than it would be a Tibbs.
Well, it is, but I also think that people look at the Timberwolves organization and having made the playoffs once, which was last year since 2004, they don't look at it as much as a coaching issue as they do an ownership, player, scouting, whatever it might be. They just have never taken that big leap since you know, KG and friends were here in 2004, and they had the 1 year last year. That's been it. So I don't care who you bring in, you know, Pat Riley in his prime, or whomever you want to bring in, Popovich, all these guys, how can you coach this team and up to the point where you're going to be a real contender? And the Wolves had a chance last year until Buckets got hurt. You know, they were a third or fourth seed. But I agree with you in principle, but in time, and I think Saunders...
That'll change.
Yeah, should change. Yeah. They wouldn't want it any other way. But at the same time, because with the Wolves organization, I think it's a little different where you have nothing but, for the most part, you know, a lot of failed draft picks. Obviously, we're seeing the development of, you know, obviously a Carl Anthony Towns, you hope an Andrew Wiggins still, big question mark, the raw enthusiasm of a Josh Okogie right now. But for the most part, they haven't really moved the needle very much at all. With Lindsay Whalen, I think, you know, as iconic a person as she is in this state, I heard you a little bit, if she hits a plateau and this team doesn't move the needle in a few years, it's still going to be, you know, they're not doing anything. They're not moving. They're not recruiting the right players. I mean, Pitino's got the big name, but again, there's a lot of people feel he shouldn't be keeping his job after this year. So it's a little different situation. And Boudreaux may not be having a job after this.
And then they'll grab someone under 40.
Absolutely, they will.
And I'm still under 40 for a little under a year. So Greg Leopold wants to consider me.
Well,
you need to go after youth, do you not?
I think you have an opportunity to influence that locker room.
So I wanted to talk about two of those coaches specifically, and you just mentioned one, Richard Pitino. I saw another story today that's pretty much saying, man, the bad call by an official against Nebraska end up costing him his job. And I think that's just the wrong way to look at it.
Well, of course it is.
You know, Mark Coyle needs to look big picture. If Pitino's someone you think's the team's going to keep progressing for the next 3-4 years, you keep him. If you think we've hit the point where we're completely leveled out and plateaued, then you get rid of them. That one result, especially given it was an official that kind of jobbed you on that one,
right,
to me should have no impact on whether you keep him as your coach or not.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, I think with the University of Minnesota, a lot of it with the two big revenue sports in football and basketball, a lot of it has to do with putting fannies in the stands. And we all know the Gopher football team has had trouble with that. And I think Mark Coyle looks at P.J. Fleck and says, you know, we really feel like we're on the right road with this guy. And if you build it, they will come. If you win, they will come. And I think this is, as you mentioned earlier, it's a huge year for PJ, and not so much for his future here at Minnesota, but I think establishing the Gophers as a player in this town. And I think that's when you look at his future here. I think if PJ wants, you know, for all accounts, as much time as spent with him, I think he really does want to establish something here. You never say never, especially in college football. Tino's situation is a little different because he's got three really good freshmen that he recruited from Minnesota this year. And Oturo, I think, is going to be a real stud, and I think Kalsha will be a really good player. And Omersa, once he figures out how to play the game at a different level. But his other recruit, you know, Isaiah Washington, they brought in, done nothing.
No.
I mean, he had all those fancy YouTube videos and can't figure out how to distribute the basketball.
Is he like Jelly Roll or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, here we go again. You're not going to probably get the top echelon player in the state. You're not going to get the hurt kid. You know, he's like, Mike Krzyzewski was here watching him play last night. How do you think that went?
It'd be nice.
I mean, yeah. Okay, I think Pitino can just invite him over for dinner and everything will be good.
Nice to keep one of those just once.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Amir, to a certain extent, I know he's not at that level, but Amir was a highly thought of recruit.
The three guys they got are really good players, but they're not Trey Jones, and they're not, you know, they're not that top.
Not Tyus player.
Right, exactly. You know, if you land one of those guys, yeah, I mean, Khalid El-Amin put his hat on, then went to UConn. You know, I mean, it's like we've had some great players here. Sam Jacobson, and you go down the list of some of the great players that played at the University of Minnesota, going back to McHale and Brewer and those guys. Would they have stayed here under today's circumstances? Would Kevin McHale, who ended up being one of the top 50 players in the NBA, had said, you know, Minnesota's my home. I grew up in Hibbing. I want to play here, as opposed to, you know, going to play at UCLA or Duke or Kentucky or somewhere else at that particular time. Who knows?
The women on the other side, you doubted Lindsay Whalen in the Gopher women's basketball.
I did.
All they do is win.
Yeah.
I call her Winsy Whalen.
I heard that.
65-45 over Purdue, and they performed at the time when you needed it the most. They outscored the Boilermakers 20-2 in the final 10 minutes. So they're now back to 7-7 in the Big Ten. They were once 3-7 in the conference.
Yeah, again, I think Lindsay knows what deck she has, she's playing with, and, you know, she's got some talented players on the team, but she's got plenty of time. And I think of Lindsay Whalen walking. I don't just mean here in Minnesota. You know, go start recruiting nationally, and she's done that. When Lindsay Whalen walks in your living room, she's got her reputation precedes her. And I think if you're a young lady and you're playing high school basketball and you listen to what Lindsay Whalen has to offer, you're going to be impressed with that and what her basketball IQ and her resume and what she's, you know, how she's developing her team here. You have to sell them on a lot of things, obviously. Education is a big part of it. But I think there's a lot that the university can offer, and I think Whalen will have that opportunity in the next couple of years to recruit some really good players here.
Minnesota Twins. Yesterday, I think it was actually official today. The Polanco and Kepler both signed for at least 5 years
right.
on both sides, and then
right.
you had options on both of them. Phil Miller also reporting that Jose Berríos, Eddie Rosario, and Taylor Rogers also in the mix for new contracts. Two names not included, and then the two names that we're going to be talking about the most with this franchise is Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano. I know there's a little bit more boom or bust with those two, maybe, compared to the other players, which would make you be hesitant to give them money. But to me, Polanco and Kepler are not making big bucks. I mean, we're talking $5 million a year, $7 million a year.
Right.
That's not... Why can't you throw something like that towards Buxton and Sano? Because they both have potential to far outpace
I think
those
in time
salaries.
They will, and it'll be a lot more than that. But
because if you sit on them, it gets more expensive.
If
they perform like they can.
That's the big if. There's a high ceiling for it, and I think the Twins I don't want this to be a preposterous statement. I think the Twins will pony up if it gets to that point. But right now, how can you trust? How do you trust either one of them right now? They're propping these guys up like, you know, Buxton's the best shape I've seen him in. You know, and Sano, in particular, Sano, who you basically had to handle with kid gloves. I mean, have you ever seen when's the last time you had a professional athlete where we're just dissecting everything from everything he's eating for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and how he's performing at third base? Like, oh, are you okay, Miguel? Are you handling things okay? Are you doing all right? Come on, suck it up. I mean, it's like, it's time. And it's like, if you don't...
You old types don't know how to work with these millennials.
I know. That's why I won't be managing the Twins. But I think it's... I agree. Those are the two key guys. They are the reason that the Twins are going to be competitive. Buxton and Sano, obviously, besides pitching, Buxton and Sano have to be durable and productive. And Buxton can single-handedly...
Buxton's put on 20 pounds. Muscle.
Can he hit a curveball on the outside part of the plate? And go, you know, that's what I want
to
see.
Buxton or Sano?
Either one. Either one, okay? That's what I want to see. I'm just saying,
Miguel Sano always has 40 home run potential in him.
He does.
And when he does...
He's actually a pretty good fielder.
And when he does, because it's going to happen, he's going to be too expensive for you.
They can sign him before
And then they're
that.
Not going to... They're going to wait till he finally has a good year and then not sign him. Not resign him because it'll be too expensive.
Okay, common.
That's what's
going to
happen.
Well, I get it, but right now you can't trust him.
Max Kepler hit like 230 last year.
I know.
Year.
I get it. Well, they're not giving him.
And I still would have made him the contract.
But
I'm saying, why can't you throw those type of contracts towards Sano and Buxton? You're not giving them the farm.
They probably wouldn't accept them.
Well, give it a shot.
I think those discussions have been had already, but I think it's more of go out and prove it. I mean, right now, looking at their stats and how they haven't performed, especially Sano in particular too. I mean, he's been hurt all the time and. And Buxton, well, same. Really, there's much difference between the two of them. We're still selling hope and selling potential with those two guys. And it would be nice. You think of the lineup they could put out there with some of the new additions they have. Not bad. I mean, it's not a bad lineup. I think it's an exciting lineup. How they're going to pitch, it's a whole other thing.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, that's always the key.
You're going to be at home all weekend watching NBA All-Star Weekend?
I'm not going to be watching a second of it.
You're not going to watch?
No.
So we got.
I heard you talk about All-Star
Carl
games.
Carl Anthony Towns in the big game.
Yeah,
big and game. And then Okogie's in the prospects or whatever. What do they call it? Shining Stars.
Are they still doing the slam dunk contest?
Probably. Yeah. I got bored of that a long time ago.
I did too.
When your best slam dunkers don't want to be in the contest,
they should have an alumni and have Michael Jordan.
I would watch that.
Or have more than that to a dunk contest.
They might have to lower the hoop, but
have a three-point shooting contest between Jordan and Bird.
No, I want to watch like a 3-on-3 game.
Those guys will have heart attacks.
Like Jordan, Pippen, and Dennis Rodman.
I would watch that.
Versus
Bird, McHale.
Hakeem Olajuwon, Clyde Parrish, Drexler. Yeah.
Exactly.
Half court. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too.
We will see you Monday or not. I don't remember.
I'll be checking in. I'm involved with the Minnesota Wild.
That's
a really wonderful project on Monday. We'll talk more about it.
All right. Thanks to you. Thanks to Ryan Donaldson. A reminder, I will be in Sauk Rapids tomorrow night, the Armadillo Sports Deck Arena. 7:30 game, Granite City Lumberjacks versus the New Ulm Steel. If you want to check out a tarp shooter, maybe purchase one, maybe purchase some tarp shooter swag. I'll be there tomorrow night. Dan Barrero, Justin Gard are next. It's been a good day.
Back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Common Man channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.